All right.
Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key, or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away, huh. But I feel alright, I feel alright tonight. Feel alright. I feel alright tonight. And I'll bring you precious contraband and ancient.
All right. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGiulio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, and we are here till 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. weekday mornings. It's Monday. So that means Monday morning, that means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And Jim and Eric in just a couple of minutes are going to be joining me to review all the new movies, and we'll talk about box office with Eric as well. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. We're going to talk about the Grammys. And if you guys watch the show, we'll review some of the performances and talk about the winners and the losers. So we've got that coming up. And also, we were talking baseball last week, and I want to talk about just sporting events in general. Like, what was the most memorable sporting event that you've ever been to? So we're going to get into that as well, covering the Grammys, covering the performances, talking a little sporting events, memorable sporting events that you've been to. And as always, you can call us up at 312-981-7200 for talk and text. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Stay connected with us on Facebook, facebook.com/Nick D Show. And also download our podcasts. Every second of the show is podcast, and you can download it. Go to your iTunes or any place you get your podcasts and subscribe. It's free, and they will automatically be sent to your device, and you can listen at your leisure, bro. I just want to let everybody know, Dan Shagru is taking this week off. He's taking a little time off. So Ben is filling in. Ben, you're filling in all week.
Yeah.
Appreciate that, man.
Anytime.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Yeah, Dan's just taking a little time off. But Ben is here to produce this this morning. We also have a Blackhawks Express. Boy, what about them Hawks, man?
I was producing the game.
Yeah.
And they've been awesome.
On fire.
Yeah.
On fire, man.
And Cahoon out of nowhere.
I know.
That was awesome.
Insane. Yeah, seven in a row. So we'll get to that. That'll be a fun. That's the last seven have been fun to listen to, the last expresses. So we're looking forward to that. And that's coming up later on. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. So, Ben, thanks, man, for taking the time to hang out with us this morning. And it's always fun to have you in producing. And in the newsroom, it's Vic Vaughn. Hi, Vic.
Hey, good morning, sir.
How are you, man?
Pretty good.
Yeah. You did you see any of the Hawks game this afternoon?
I was sleeping.
Yeah.
Yeah. I slept most of the afternoon, but it was the first thing I checked when I woke up.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Couldn't believe it.
Pretty crazy. Did you see any of the Grammys?
No.
Okay.
No.
It was pretty long.
Was it?
Yeah.
And I heard Lisa talking about Dolly Parton and
Miley Cyrus.
Thank you.
Yeah.
What song? Do you recall what song they sang?
They sang Jolene.
Yes. Okay.
Jolene,
they do very well.
Yeah, and then another I can't remember what band it was. They came out and accompanied Dolly Parton on this new song called Red Shoes,
which was
I thought amazing.
Curious.
She's unbelievable. Dolly Parton is unbelievable. She's unbelievable. I mean, yeah, she really is.
She's great.
Yeah,
she is really something.
And
she's been doing it a long time. What a pro.
Yeah, absolutely. And she's still got such a great sense of humor, and she can sing.
A performer. I mean, still, you know what I mean? At this stage in her life, she can still capture an audience.
No question about it.
No doubt about it.
And I guess I didn't even realize that Miley Cyrus is her goddaughter.
I knew that. Yeah, I'm not sure how I knew that, but I did. And they've
I guess Billy Ray Cyrus is really close with Dolly Parton.
Right.
So that's how that happened.
Yep.
It was pretty cool, though, to see them sing together.
There's a song on their album. I'm trying to remember. Something about rainbows or something. Mm-hmm. It's great. It's on Miley Cyrus's latest album.
My favorite performance, and we're going to get into the Grammys later on, and I want to hear from you guys when we talk about it. My favorite performance of the night was Brandi Carlile. I thought she was great. Just really, really great. I thought, like, by far the best performance of the night. And there were a lot of interesting performances. And, you know, one of the things that they do on the Grammys now is they try to, you know, have artists, they pair artists up who don't necessarily, you know, you wouldn't expect to be together, to perform together. That's one of the things that they do, like, every year at the Grammys. And then it's, like I was saying before when I was talking to Carl and Lisa, that it's not really, the Grammys are not really about the awards per se. I mean, you know, they hand out the major awards, but it's mostly about the performances. That's like the main reason that people tune in, because you get to see, you know, every genre of music is being performed, and you know, from the latest to some classics, and so, like, Diana Ross celebrated her 75th birthday with a fantastically over the top performance, like only Diana Ross can do. You know what I mean? And her grandson, who's 9 years old, introduced her, and he's got some serious hair. This kid, it's fantastic. So. But yeah, no, we'll talk about the Grammys a little bit later on. So if you watched it, we'll talk about the performances coming up. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Been a crazy weekend. I had to get a new phone, and I hate change. I hate it. But my phone was not charging correctly, so I ended up just getting a new one. And so that was nice and stressful. By the way, can I just say this? You know, you remember when, you know, you go in to get a used car or a car, and the salesman would, you know, those used car salesmen, you know, trying to upsell you and trying to, you know, swindle you. Let me explain something right now. Those guys are now working at cell phone stores. Those guys are now hawking cell phones. I swear to God, it felt like I was being pressured by a used car salesman for this phone. I'm not kidding. I mean, it's every step of the way I was like, you guys are trying to be slick. So the used car guys no longer work at used car lots. They work in phone stores.
This is good to know.
Yeah.
Cuz I need to replace mine
soon. Well, you're going to be pressured. Let me just tell you, that's what they're doing now, man. That, you know, I just kind of sat there grinning the whole time. I was like, "Look, I'm going to get a new phone. Just calm down, dude." I mean, all the way, you know, like sitting at the desk and, you know, pushing numbers around and trying to upsell me on other stuff and other equipment. Hey, you want a tablet? No, I don't want a tablet.
I knew a guy who not too long ago used to do that. He's much younger than I am. He's been probably in his mid-20s. He told me that they had meetings before they opened the doors in the back, and they were chanting songs and, like, to pump each other up. The supervisor, he said it was fun.
I'm not surprised, man. I'm not surprised. I'm just saying, these guys are the new salesmen, man. I'm telling you right now, these are the guys, man. There's no longer used car salesmen. It's phone salesmen. So be ready, Ben, for like a very used car salesman experience.
I will mentally prepare myself.
If it's anything like what I went through on Friday. Ridiculous. So anyway, I like the new phone. It's fine, you know. It does stuff. I don't know. Long as I can call and text, that's all I care about, you know. So far we can do that. All right. Jim and Eric are going to join me right after we take this break. And we got all the new movies to review and the box office to talk about as well.
Hollywood Boulevard. Some that you recognize, some
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio on a Monday morning, and we are here till 5 a.m. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. We're going to talk about the Grammys. Did you guys watch the show? I got the list of the winners and talking about some of the performances and stuff like that, and much more coming up here on the show. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. You can also follow us on Twitter, at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected, though, is on our Facebook page, and that's facebook.com/Nick D Show. Yeah, it's Monday, which means it's time for the Monday morning movie reviews. Jim Laskowski and Eric Childress join me every Monday morning to review the new movies. We also talk box office with Eric coming up as well. So let's get the guys on. Here's Eric Childress. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Jim, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
All right. So let's see. Jim, why don't you start us out with Arctic?
Okay, happy to. This is from director Joe Penna, who I believe is making his feature film debut here. And this stars the always compelling Mads Mikkelsen, who most folks might remember as the title character from the show Hannibal, of course. Here he plays a man whose private plane has crashed sometime in the past. We don't really know how long he's been up in the mountains here, but he's definitely trapped, isolated, and attempting to endure the extreme circumstances. He's managed to come up with like a daily routine by which he can survive in the frozen wilderness here. The routine sort of involves set times to maintain his SOS sign in the snow, ideal times for fishing, checking for radio signals in a very old-fashioned way. He's practically like using a crank to do it. And he's essentially just ruled by the beeping of his wrist watch, a watch that kind of just informs him every time he needs to change tasks in order to keep moving. So, you know, thankfully, despite the extreme cold, he does have some reliable piece of technology, more or less. And one day it seems like rescue might be imminent when a medical helicopter arrives on the scene, and they notice his signal. They try to land safely, but unfortunately it's also in the midst of a horrendous snowstorm with extreme high winds that ends up causing that helicopter to crash right before his very eyes. There is one lone survivor from that crash, and that would be the co-pilot, who is wounded and barely staying alive herself. She's pretty much unable to walk. So our main character here finds himself caring for this co-pilot and forced to make choices not just for himself, but for someone else. And really, that's all there is in terms of plot and setup here, because most of this film takes an approach that is very similar to All Is Lost, I would say, from years back. And that was the Robert Redford film, which was just a one-man show about a man whose boat is about to sink, and he has to figure out how he's going to survive this. And personally, I love a good survival story, you know, watching how people are going to persevere and make the best of their situation. And for this experience, watching this in our current climate, you'll likely feel a little bit better about the polar vortex we endured. It pales in comparison to what we witnessed our character go through here. There is constant extreme cold, blowing blizzards of snow, dangerous terrain, and there are very intense moments, one that takes place in a cave involving a polar bear. And, you know, there's all these attempts to just stay warm and eat well and simply just remain alive. So it's a taut, like, 90-minute survival story that is essentially the Mads Mikkelsen show. We get to see him incredibly vulnerable and desperate, which is not normally the kinds of characters he's portrayed in the past. So as a showcase for his acting talent, I think this is worth a look. It doesn't really offer anything new, and I think the film has a disservice in that there's no backstory or personal history to the character, so it's kind of hard to have a strong emotional investment in the way we do for someone like Tom Hanks in Castaway. But I think from moment to moment, it's pretty effective since, you know, we're able to place ourselves in his position and try to make the right decisions for self-preservation. But be prepared. It's all about survival. There's very little plot. It is suspenseful and intense. I don't think I can give it 100% glowing recommendation, since I did find it to be pretty predictable and I could have used a little more character depth. But if you're a fan of survival stories like Castaway or All Is Lost, this is a pretty decent contained exercise that is worth seeing, but it doesn't stand out from the crowd either. But I think if you're a fan of this great actor, you'll definitely want to watch this. And I believe it's playing exclusively at the Landmark Century, if you're curious about
it. Yeah, that's where it's playing. You're right. I think he's a terrific actor. I've always liked him. Always liked him. And I particularly liked him on Hannibal. I loved that show. So that's Arctic playing at the Landmark Century Center Cinema. So there you go. All right, let's move on. Eric, how about High Flying Bird?
Okay, well, this is the latest film from Steven Soderbergh. It is currently playing on Netflix, and it stars Andre Holland as a sports agent during a lockout of the NBA. As the film opens, we get to meet sort of his one of his star clients, a young man in the NBA who's not exactly good on the business side of things. He's actually being chastised at the beginning of the film for a bad loan that he makes. But the NBA lockout is not just affecting the players, it also affects the people that handle the players, like Holland's character, who finds himself with his expense accounts frozen until the company that he works for can start getting paid from the NBA and his players, of course, because there's just no money going around. And so over the course of a few days, we get to meet other people that he's involved with, his assistants, played by Zazie Beetz. There's an old coach, played by Bill Duke. Zachary Quinto plays his boss. Kyle MacLachlan plays one of the owners of the NBA teams. As he basically is trying to navigate, how to possibly get this lockout stopped. But through the course of that, this is a basketball movie that actually doesn't really involve any basketball whatsoever, but it is about the game itself, or as Holland's character puts it throughout the film, so the game above the game, which is the business side of things. And, this is a film about sort of recognizing that the NBA, players, we've seen a lot of this, through the college ranks, but also going up to the NBA ranks, that there is, kind of a mentality of property amongst these men, that they can't do anything without the NBA's say-so. And so when the rich white owners have an opportunity to make more money or get a bigger piece of the pie from them, they're going to take it, and they're basically going to get screwed. And this entire project, in many ways, by Soderbergh, while is written by the guy that wrote the original play for Moonlight, Barry Jenkins' film, Andre Holland was in the film as well. But the whole entire project feels like Soderbergh, in a way, kind of masking, exactly what this film is about. This is another film that he shot on an iPhone. So he's taking, the idea that, people, young filmmakers who want to create in Hollywood no longer have to be beholden to the game that goes on in Hollywood. That if they have an iPhone and they have the means, they can create anything they want. And he also premiered this film at Slamdance this year, not Sundance, but Slamdance. Sundance, which famously premieres Sex, Lies, and Videotape. So he's even sort of it's a little kind of a a wink and a nod to that aspect too. And I thought, I actually watched this film twice over the weekend. The first time I watched it, I watched it. It was kind of like feeling like it almost feels like a play. In many respects, is a lot of individual vignettes, and the way that he shoots with the iPhone kind of relates to that. And it felt like a David Mamet play in many respects. The dialogue really crackles. There's a lot tough guy talk and stuff throughout the film. But also, it kind of has a kind of a Mamet-esque twist to it as well. So the first time I watched it, I was kind of a little taken aback by some of that, but watching it again and really sort of grasping what this film was really trying to say about the NBA and sports and creativity and Hollywood in general, I think this is actually one of the strongest films that Soderbergh's made in some time, and I recommend it quite highly.
Okay. All right, there you go. That's High Flying Bird, which is available on Netflix as we speak. Boy, that retirement worked out really well for him.
Yeah, right?
All right, guys, hang on. Eric Childress and Jim Liskowski are here, and we're reviewing the new movies. We got a break here for the news. When we come back, we got more movie reviews coming up right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. You can call us up for talk or text at 312-981-7200. We're going to talk Grammys a little bit later on. What'd you guys think of the show? Got a list of the winners and all that cool stuff. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's Monday. And it is Monday, which means that it's movie reviews, and that's what we're doing right now. Jim Liskowski and Eric Childress join me every Monday morning to review the new movies, and we've got some other movies to talk about. And you can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Stay connected on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. So let's get back to the movie reviews. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Jim, welcome back.
And thank you.
All right. So let's see. Jim, tell us about The Man Who Killed Hitler and then The Bigfoot.
All right. Well, this is actually another debut from director Robert D. Kwiatkowski. And, yeah, but, well, the title kind of says it all. But when you know who the lead actor is, it's hard not to be a little curious about how this plays out. The great Sam Elliott plays Calvin Barr, and he's a decorated World War II veteran who prefers to be alone and on his own due to a rather eventful history. He spends his present day kind of just hanging around his empty house with his loyal dog, and his evenings are kind of occupied by spending time at the local watering hole. But we do learn a lot about his history as a young soldier, since he often thinks back to the years surrounding World War II, when he courted a local school teacher and later worked as a spy of sorts for the U.S. government. And a great deal of time is sort of devoted to unpacking Calvin's life, which ultimately leads to the revelation that he was, in fact, responsible for the death of Nazi leader Adolf Hitler. And then about halfway through the proceedings here, after we witness that execution, a government agent played by Ron Livingston approaches Calvin to let him know that the only man who could possibly track and kill Bigfoot, who happens to be terrorizing the environment there, the only person that can do this is the same guy who murdered Hitler. And, you know, also, it's conveniently, Calvin has a rare immune system mutation that allows him to be near Bigfoot without ever getting sick. So he's the man for the job, and he reluctantly decides to take them up on their offer and ventures out on the quest. And once again, yeah, the title doesn't lie. But, you know, at the same time, with someone like Sam Elliott on board, you can expect a rather unique, compelling character study, to say the least. It's been so great to see him have a comeback, particularly with for his well-deserved recognition for A Star Is Born. But again, like a couple of other movies this week, this is relatively light on plot and surprisingly simple when it comes to portraying just how Calvin became the man that he is. It does jump back and forth in time with kind of a fractured narrative that does cause some
pacing issues, I think, but I was always invested in the outcome and how things play out based on Sam Elliott's presence here. You know, this character has a lot of regret pertaining to, you know, the lost love of his life. He has a lot of grief and trauma and complex emotions. So this, it turns out it's not this movie that you would, you know, expect from the title. Like, you know, maybe you thought, maybe, oh, this is going to be like Hobo with a Shotgun or something, like a shoot-'em-up B-grade movie with one of the best character actors on the planet. But it's a lot slower and more meditative and focuses a lot on aging and mourning the past, which I kind of hadn't anticipated, but I did find it heartwarming. There's a great scene where Calvin gives a speech about why he wasn't a hero, and it's nothing like a comic book, and, you know, it's nothing like the government official thought it would be when you sort of relaying the story to him. And in a way, it's not unlike the hero, you know, which was a kind of a straightforward, semi-autobiographical portrayal of Sam Elliott's the actor and the person. But I think that the director here really, you know, focuses a lot on the past, on the sort of wartime romance and the heartbreak he experienced. But really, once again, this movie, you know, not to sound like a broken record, but it's just another terrific display of a great, talented actor with this incredible screen presence. And, you know, the movie itself, it's fine. I think it's worth seeing, though I wish it was more of a kind of a badass action movie with Sam Elliott. I wish there was more of that. But it does end on a nice note of catharsis, and there's a wonderful relationship between him and his dog. So I thought it was pretty good. The energy isn't quite there. The pacing could have been better. But in terms of watching a legend on screen giving a nice, complex, layered performance, I'm recommending it solely on the joy of watching Sam Elliott steal the show here. So if you're a fan of his, definitely check it out.
You know, the first time I heard about this movie was from Steve Procopi, who saw it. He saw it at one of the festivals, and when he told me the title of it, I was like, "What are you kidding me? The Man Who Killed Hitler and Then the Bigfoot." But he said, you know, like pretty much like you said, Jim. He said it's more of a character study than anything else. You know, I mean, you look at the poster for this movie, and then you hear, you know, you look at the title, and you think, oh, well, this is just going to be Sam Elliott running around like a lunatic, shooting people and shooting Bigfoots. But that's not
what right. It's not
a,
that.
It's a very contemplative film, is what Steve said. So, and he liked it too. So,
yeah.
All right. So that's The Man Who Killed Hitler.
Yeah, it's quite good.
And then The Bigfoot, which is available on VOD as well. All right, Eric.
Mm-hmm.
What about Cold Pursuit?
Okay. Well, this is a remake of the 2014 Norwegian film An Order of Disappearance, and it stars Liam Neeson as, I guess, a snowplow driver in Denver, whose son works at the airport, is mysteriously killed. In a very, very complex murder scheme. It turns out to be over just a mild drug deal gone wrong. The people that are involved are basically the drug kingpins of the Denver area. And in pure Liam Neeson fashion, he is going to seek out revenge against those that did it. He actually first contemplates something else, but when he gets word of exactly who is behind his son's death, he seeks out and starts killing them one by one by one. And what starts off as what seems to be a very simple revenge tale actually gets further contemplative complicated and actually quite farcical, as it involves not just the local Denver mob kingpin, but also the local Indian kingpins, who are also, so it turns into a big turf war on top of it, all caused by this snowplow driver who's just trying to get vengeance for his son. This is a movie that, you know, when I say the word farcical, I'm not, you know, using that word lightly. You know, you expect you know, Liam Neeson to seek revenge for his son in a movie like this, and you expect more of the same. But this movie, in many respects, is a comedy and an intentional one. And I think that when you see this movie, there's a scene very early in the movie after his son is killed in a morgue where they come to identify the body. And it's obviously, you know, in real life and in many of these situations, this is a very serious moment. But if you are laughing at the scene, then you're going to be on board for this movie. Maybe it takes you a little bit longer to understand that, you know, they're actually possibly making some sort of statement on the nature of these revenge movies, or even Liam Neeson ones for that matter. But, I mean, the original tone of the original film was also comical in nature as well. And this film takes it to points that I was absolutely not expecting. And I from now on, I want, whether it's an action movie or a mob movie or whatever it is, I want a running tally on screen, like this movie does, of who's getting killed. I think it's such a wonderful little gimmick that's done throughout the movie, and the more it happens, the more it made me laugh. You know, this is not just a typical blood and guts revenge film, although there is plenty of that in it. The violence gets, you know, as serious as it seems early on, it gets more and more comical throughout, but with a straight face on itself. And I really enjoyed this film. I had a lot of fun with it. It was better than, you know, the atypical stuff that I had been expecting from Neeson recently. I had a really, really terrific time with this movie.
Okay, cool. All right, guys, hang on a second, okay? Jim and Eric are going to hang on. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we got more movie reviews coming up right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. It's Monday morning, and that means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke, and we've got the movie reviews right now, and that's what we're talking about, and we got more movies to talk about. And also, Eric is going to stick around, and we'll talk box office, too, which we do every Monday. So Let's get back. Here's Eric. Welcome back, Eric.
Thank you.
And Jim. Welcome back, Jim.
Thank you.
All right. So, Jim, tell us about The Prodigy.
Okay. Well, this comes from Nicholas McCarthy, who previously gave us At the Devil's Door and The Pact. This stars Orange is the New Black's Taylor Schilling as Sarah, a woman who's expecting with her husband, John, played by Peter Mooney. And, well, their son, Miles, is born, but significantly earlier than expected. But otherwise, he seems to be in perfectly good health. In fact, as Miles starts to grow up, he exhibits more and more signs of super genius level and, you know, intelligence. He's kind of a savant of some regard, too. And this obviously delights his parents. But as you might gather from the trailer, by the time he turns, I believe, 8, he starts to struggle. He struggles to socialize with other kids his age and kind of isolates himself to an alarming degree. And then he begins to do more and more unsettling things, leading his parents to worry. He gets a little too close at times to his mom, makes creepy faces at nearly everyone he comes into contact with, and eventually starts to externalize
his behavior in violent ways. And on the advice of one of their doctors, Sarah meets with an unconventional therapist. And this therapist has encountered children like Miles before and has this really outlandish explanation for the cause of his problems and for his behavior. At first, Sarah sort of dismisses him, believing that there must be a more logical reason for this hostile and violent behavior. But Miles continues to act out in very disturbing ways, and Sarah begins to uncover more and more evidence that the therapist might have been right, and she's running out of time to save him, and, you know, but it's just a really complicated situation, because early in the film as well, there is an introduction to a particular serial killer for reasons we'll later discover, and we're sort of left wondering about how that ties in, and we do kind of find out what role the serial killer plays in all of this. So, yeah, like you said last week, Nick, we can't go 1 year, it seems like, without a bad seed, creepy kid movie. And that's exactly what this is, through and through. You know, the various children playing Miles, there's Jackson Robert Scott, you know, he's the main one, but then you have a younger actor, David Coldsmith, and he actually is very creepy. He makes a very creepy impression early on. And I think that's about all this film really has going for it, are decent performances caught in this kind of a slog. It's kind of like this more simplistic, straightforward horror take on something more complex, like, you know, we need to talk about Kevin. But to some degree, this is also kind of a more serious version of the original Child's Play for reasons you'll probably figure out. There's no mystery, especially in the back half of the film, and there's just no suspense or surprise, especially if you've seen any number of creepy kid movies in the past. For me, its biggest crime is that it's not scary. There are even a couple of unintentional laughs. One I won't give away involving Paprika, of all things. It seems that the screenwriter is kind of assuming that a kid looking creepy in skeleton makeup or doing violent things is enough to sustain a 90-minute movie, but it really doesn't work. The final showdown doesn't go anywhere, and, you know, it results in kind of a very familiar trope that we've seen time and time again. I mean, I think on the basis of a couple of moments that I mentioned, like, you know, unintended humor is there, so you may not, you might be reasonably entertained in a so bad it's good kind of way, but I think the majority of horror fans are going to be really disappointed with this one. As far as this subgenre is concerned, there are just way many better options to seek out, while this one here, I just cannot recommend at all.
Yeah, I was bored out of my mind during this movie. I was bored to death.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's, you know, we've seen, you know, as you said, Jim, I mean, you know, we have 5-6 creepy kid movies a year, and this just does not stand out as the one. I think the kids are pretty good, though, you know. And I'm a fan of Taylor Schilling. She doesn't have much to do here, but I like her. I think she's got a great presence. There are a couple of creepy moments in the movie, but overall, we've seen this 9,000 times, you know, before, and much more in a much more interesting fashion, and just, you know. But I was just, more than anything else, it's not scary. But the biggest crime is that it's boring. I was just bored.
Right.
I didn't care about any of the characters. None of the situations were particularly scary. We've seen, you know, creepy kid movies 8,000 times, and this is not a good one. So I'm not recommending The Prodigy unless you want to go to the movies and just be bored for an hour and a half. So there you go. All right. Now, I do want to mention that none of us saw What Men Want.
No, because we already know.
Because it's the role reversal of the Mel Gibson movie from a few years ago,
right?
What Women Want,
yeah.
But it's got Taraji P. Henson as the woman who gets knocked on the head, and then she can hear the inner thoughts of men. So it's the same thing, basically. It's just the role reversal of the Mel Gibson movie, and we'll talk about how it did at the box office. It actually made a pretty good amount of money.
Okay. Yeah.
So we'll jump into that, but we did not see it. what men want, and I'm not particularly upset about missing it. So there you
go. Yeah, same here.
All right. All right. Eric, tell us about the Lego Movie 2, the second part.
All right. This is the direct sequel to the Lego Movie from 2014. The film takes place 5 years in the future from that film, where Emmett and Lucy are hoping to start a new life together. But recent events have turned the Lego world into what is now called Apocalypseburg, a grittier version of the original master builder Legoland that we saw in the original film. There are premonitions about that something horrible is on the horizon, an Armageddon of sorts. But Emmett still remains optimistic. But Apocalypseburg does come under attack from someone known as Captain Mayhem, General Mayhem, and she comes and she has been tasked with kidnapping a number of the people at Apocalypseburg and bringing them back to a queen of another land, voiced by Tiffany Haddish, who is intent on marrying Batman. Yes, Batman returns. Will Arnett's Batman returns in this film. And he is, you know, while he learned the importance of family in his own standalone film, he is still pretty commitment phobic. But that's going to change very quickly with the Queen, not knowing whether or not she is on the level or if she is up to some other nefarious plan. Emmett and Lucy are still trying to save everyone and put everything right before the impending Armageddon. That includes a new character known as Rex Dangervest, who is basically an alter ego version of Emmett's character, rough and tumble adventurer, more of an alpha male type. And Emmett is trying to sort of, you know, bring himself to be a little bit more like him to impress the more spirited, adventurous Lucy. So the Lego Movie from 2014.
Okay, hang on, Eric. Okay, we're going to take a break, and then we'll get back in here, and we'll talk more about the Lego Movie Part 2. Which is out, and then we got box office coming up as well. So we'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll get everybody's thoughts on the new Lego Movie right after this on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here on a Monday morning. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And there you go. Before the break, we were talking about the movies, and Eric told us about the plot for the Lego Movie 2, the second part. And now let's find out what these guys think of it. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Jim, welcome back.
Thank you much.
All right. All right, Eric, Lego Movie 2.
Yeah, so back in 2014 when the Lego Movie, you know, came out, or at least first announced that we knew that this was going to happen, a degree of skepticism, I think, kind of washed over all of us. Like, oh God, they're actually going to, you know, try to do something out of this. And, you know, thanks to Phil Lord and Christopher Miller, they created one of the greatest animated surprises that we've had probably in the last decade. A movie that was not just, beautifully animated and manic and in a great, not annoying way, and hysterically funny, but also had, kind of a twist ending that really just kind of turned a lot of us into puddles at the end of the film, as that one certainly did. And you know, those who know what the ending that I'm talking about, we'll be happy to know that that's actually really been integrated into this film throughout a large portion of it. But one of the really great joys of this one is actually trying to figure out how the Lego world actually translates into that real world. There's a lot of sort of dangling threads, and just when, you know, I thought that I had everything figured out, it actually puts a spin on, you know, those things that I thought it was going for, and it actually takes it into different directions. I mean, this film has a lot going on for itself. I mean, the whole concept of Emmett's alter ego is Rex Dangervest, both voiced by Chris Pratt, by the way, is just, you know, is a really great reminder of, you know, this sort of the, you know, the prevailing theme of toxic masculinity that we're probably going to be seeing in every other movie coming out over the next couple of years. But it's just a reminder, you know, that, you know, men, just be good. Just be good and just be decent. You don't have to be everything all the time to impress certain people. Just be decent to one another. On top of that, the movie is still really quite funny. I think maybe the Lego movie and maybe even the Lego Batman movie maybe had some bigger laughs for me, and maybe a little bit more consistent throughout. But this one has a steady stream throughout that just kept a smile on my face through the entire way. And by the end of the film, it got me again in you know, an unexpected way. And what the you know, the relationships that evolve throughout the story, it really, you know, kind of struck at my heart a bit. And you know, so that's it's kind of amazing that these films work as well as they really do. Lord Miller didn't direct this one, but did write the screenplay for it, and obviously have, you know, their fingers in the Spider-Man movie as well. These guys just keep making animated movies, as far as I'm concerned. Just give them whatever they want to do, and let them just keep making them, because they make a lot of really great ones. And, you know, so far this is my favorite movie of the year.
Okay. All right. Jim, what do you think?
Yeah, no, I'm in agreement with Eric here. I'm just a huge fan of these screenwriters in general. I mean, yeah, they directed the heck out of the first one, and I adored the first movie. And this one really does manage to replicate the tone that made the first film so, you know, yeah, Eric said manic, and yet it's not annoying in its pacing, and it's like, sort of like ADD, kind of throwing every joke at you left and right. I find it really endearing in almost like a Zucker Brothers kind of way, with that sort of energetic style to, you know, throwing a bunch of jokes. And some of them don't land. I definitely feel that the first movie was a little more funnier. But I liked the fact that this is kind of a push and pull between two imaginations here in very interesting ways that we sort of learned to discover. And, you know, it's just a fun escapist adventure, but also really, really smart and self-aware, as, you know, fans of the original would probably come to expect. You know, there are huge laughs late in the film when characters begin to sing "Everything's Not Awesome," as well as just the origins of Rex Dangervest. I wouldn't spoil it, but they managed to turn a favorite movie of mine into a verb in a way that had me roaring, and I imagine it did for you guys too. It has a very nice moral at the end about, you know, like Eric was saying, just sort of finding harmony and being a good person. But it's very earnest and you know, not sappy in any way. I really think that these writers, yeah, absolutely should just keep doing what they do, and because they're doing it so well, including the Spider-Man movie, which I also adore too. So I love that this franchise celebrates the creativity of childhood while embracing just clever jokes and sight gags at a very fast, energetic pace. And the audience I saw this with was having a great time with it, kids and adults alike. So this is, you know, I definitely responded more strongly to the first film, But this is nearly every bit as good and exactly the kind of movie we need in February. So I highly, highly recommend families go out and support this movie for sure.
Yeah, these are great movies, man. And like you said, Eric, that first one came out of nowhere. Like, I didn't expect, you know, I didn't expect it to be good. And to be as good as it was just stellar. I saw it twice in 3 days when it first came out, and I want to go back and see this one again. This is great stuff. And the voice talent on display here is so good. And everybody is just so, like, Chris Pratt's, both of the voices that he provides here are just great. You know what I mean? You could just feel the joy in him as he's voicing this, and there's great chemistry between the characters. And of course, Will Arnett is hilarious. The Batman character is just hilarious. And I liked it almost as much as the first one, and that's saying a lot, because that first movie was I thought it was one of the best movies of that year. And to be surprised by this again, we're mentioning these guys, Phil Lord and Christopher Miller, and I agree with you, Eric. Just let them do animation for the rest of the, you know, for whatever they want to do. Give them the okay. Give them whatever budget they want, and let them do it, because they uh-huh. they do great work. I mean, they do really, really clever, great work. And this one, you know, it's hilarious, and it's also moving, and it's also, you know, like, surprisingly deep. And I cared about all the characters very much, and I laughed my head off through the whole thing. So I am highly recommending the Lego Movie 2, the second part. So there you go. That's three raves, I believe, is what we're saying here about the Lego Movie 2.
Oh yeah, so, for sure.
Okay, all right. What do we got next week? We got that Alita Battle Angel thing.
We do. We got Rebel Wilson and Isn't It Romantic?
Mm-hmm.
And we got, what's the other thing that's opening?
Happy Death Day to you.
Happy Death Day to you.
Yeah. You know, that first movie, that first movie wasn't that bad.
Right.
The Happy Death Day. I was surprised.
I didn't like the movie, but I did like the lead performance.
She's great.
Yeah. I thought she was really good in a movie that deserved a better movie, I thought.
And I think I obviously haven't seen this one yet, but the trailer for it, and she looks like she's going to kick ass in it again.
I hope.
Yeah. So, that's coming out. Happy Death Day to you. Isn't It Romantic? And then Everybody Knows. What is that, Eric?
Oh, that's the new Barani film.
Oh, okay.
Penelope Cruz and Javier Bardem.
Got it. Oh, right. Also, I want to mention before we break here, you guys are hosting a screening of The Princess Bride.
Yeah, Wednesday at Elk Grove Cinema.
Wednesday night, one night only at Elk Grove Cinema. It's hosted by both of you guys, Jim and Eric, and it's you get to see The Princess Bride on the big screen. I'm sure you guys will get a nice big crowd for that.
Yeah, we're hoping so. I mean, just come right before Valentine's Day and see this movie, and Jim and I are going to talk about the book and the history of the movie and some trivia and stuff. It should be a really great time, and it's just such a great movie that I'm really looking forward to seeing it again on the big screen.
I gotta say, I actually prefer the book. I prefer the book. The book is a little bit different than the movie.
We're gonna talk about that.
Very cool. Okay, so that's The Princess Bride at the Elk Grove Cinema. All right, Jim, thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, looking forward to it.
All right, Eric, you hang on, okay?
Okay.
All right, Eric's gonna hang out with us. We're gonna take a break. When we come back, we got the box office right here on 720 WEGN. All right. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's Monday, and we're going to talk about the Grammys in just a few minutes. Did you watch it? What performances do you think were good? I got the list of the winners here, too, so we'll get into that. Well, we just reviewed all the new movies with Eric Childress and Jim Liskowski, and Eric sticks around to talk box office. Let's welcome Eric back. Welcome back, Eric.
Thank you.
So what do you think of the box office this week?
I was shocked, frankly, by it. The Lego movies numbers, I mean, I have a feeling that these movies were starting to run their course a bit. And I think Warner maybe went to the well a little too quickly when they did that Ninjago movie.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they had a huge hit with Lego Movie, certainly domestically. Lego Batman did very well. Lego Ninjago did next to nothing, compared to those movies. And, but I still, I mean, the lowball projections for this weekend were like 45 million. And I was expecting somewhere in like the upper 40s. That's where I was thinking. For this thing to come in at 34 million.
Yeah.
Is a huge blow to, like, we might not get a Lego Movie 3.
Yeah.
Because of this. Because these movies, you know, I mean, you know, Disney, Pixar, Illumination, these movies, their animated movies do a mega business overseas. Lego movies, not so much. I mean, the first Lego movie, you know, did very well. You know, like $460 some million worldwide. Batman did over $300 million worldwide. But you kind of have to do better than that, internationally, to, you know, really keep these things going. And this thing, you know, is probably, you know, going to get over 100 million, we hope. You know, considering that these movies don't do very well internationally, you know, this thing's probably going to come in somewhere under 250 million and a price tag of 99 million, you know, Warner Brothers is going to be wondering, is it worth it?
Yeah. It's too bad. I mean, I was shocked when I saw the numbers, too. I mean, 34.4 million, that's way low.
I mean, I was trying, you know, I was doing my best. I don't know if I got all of them, but I made a list of a number of sequels and how, like, how much less they did than their original films. Like, Alice Through the Looking Glass, for example, did much less than Alice in Wonderland, obviously. Mm-hmm. Evan Almighty compared to Bruce Almighty. And then there's, like, this. Mm. Like, that's the list that I could find. And that's, you know, a $35 million difference between the Lego movie, which, you know, was... had nothing going for it other than Legos, and then this. So I, you know, to not even do half the opening weekend that the original did is really kind of a huge disappointment.
Yeah, it is. It's pretty shocking. I'm really surprised. Okay, number two, What Men Want made 19 million. That's pretty solid.
Yeah, it's pretty decent. It's about right where I was expecting it. Pretty much a lot of people were sort of thinking around $20 million or so. The movie only cost $20 million. I don't know how they managed to pull that off, but it did. And it'll get a bit of a Valentine's Day bump, I'm sure, this upcoming Thursday, even with the Rebel Wilson competition. But, you know, this movie's probably going to get over, you know, around close to like $60 million.
Okay. Number three, Cold Pursuit, $10.8 million. That's the Liam Neeson's movies are, they're not doing as well as they used to, right?
Not really, no. You know, even despite the controversy this week, I don't think anyone was really expecting big numbers out of this. I mean, it's almost an impossible film to market. I mean, the crowd that I saw it with on Friday, you know, there were people that finally got around to, you know, to laughing at it, and I think they were laughing with it, not at it.
Yeah.
But it's a very hard film to market, because it's revenge all the way through, but it gets very comical.
Right.
And you have to be on board with that, otherwise it's going to feel like something and just like, what is this?
Yeah.
And I'm sure that's how a lot of people are going to react to it.
Yeah. Okay. Number four is The Upside, $7.2 million. It's up to almost $86 million. Wow.
Yeah, this thing looks like it's going to cross $100 million.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, the drops on this thing have been steady, consistent, small throughout. It finally leapfrogged Glass this week. I don't know if it's going to come around to outgrossing Glass, but it's going to, you know, get close.
Yeah. That's a wild success story, that thing.
Yeah.
Glass, $6.4 million. It's up to $98.4 million total, and that's a lot less than Split, correct?
Yeah, Split did $135.538 million. This one, Glass, looks like it might not make as much as The Village did. The Village is $114 million.
Yeah.
It's going to come close to that, but might be a little bit under. Again, it's a disappointment because people thought that this could do some huge business. People don't like it. That's why it's not.
Mm-hmm.
But then there just wasn't anything out there the last couple of weeks. Then it's like, oh, I guess we'll go see Glass.
Yeah.
But this movie only costs, again, like $20 million.
Yeah.
So Blumhouse Universal just like whatever.
Yeah, it doesn't matter at that point.
Nope.
Number six, The Prodigy, $6 million. That's about where it was going to be.
Right? Yeah, small budget film, $6 million. Orion Pictures released this. They're back in business.
Yeah.
It's one of those cases where it's not going to be a huge loser, really, or be a big winner for them. It's going to be one or the other, and it's probably going to be a loser.
Mm. Okay, and then number seven is Green Book, $3.5 million. Is this movie finding an audience?
Yeah, because it's the one Best Picture winner, could be a winner.
You could have.
It's the one Best Picture movie that most people didn't see. It's still out there. Most people have seen Star is Born and Bohemian Rhapsody. Both of those got over $200 million.
Yeah.
So this is the one that people found an audience. It did finally. It didn't do great when they released it. It had done less than First Man, and had a lot of people kind of scratching their heads what Universal was doing. But it's found its audience now, and people are talking about it for better or worse. So it's doing okay now.
Okay. Number eight, Aquaman, $3.3 million, $328.5 million just in America.
Yeah, it's like 11 or 12 million away from being in the top 20 grossing films of all time.
That's insane.
Yeah.
I don't understand. I don't understand that at all. I really don't.
No, if you want to see Aquaman, go see the Lego movie too.
Yeah.
Because he made, Jason Momoa's got like two lines in the movie,
yeah.
And they're better than anything in Aquaman.
Number nine, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, $3 million. That's up to almost $180 million, which is a big hit.
Yeah, it's crossed the $350 million mark worldwide. So that's a really nice success story.
And then Miss Bala comes in at number 10, $2.7 million. That's $11.8 million in 2 weeks.
Yeah, which is not a great success story by any stretch.
No, it's not. So what are we thinking for next week? What are we looking at box office wise for next week?
Well, I would have normally said Lego Movie, but that's going to come down a bit. It could be a big race for the top. I think Alita: Battle Angel is looking at a huge bomb situation.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean it might not have like a $20-30 million opening weekend. I think Isn't Romantic will do fairly well. I think that could get over $20 million. And I think Happy Death Day to You, which was a pretty solid success, that's at the very least going to be in the teens.
Yeah,
and could be as much as like 25 to 30 million or something like that, because that movie has its fans.
It does, yeah.
All I'm going to say is I don't think it's going to be Lego Movie 2 next week.
That's too bad. I would have never thought anything other than the Lego Movie being number one.
Yeah, no, I was thinking, low 40s or high 40s, maybe low 50s for it this weekend. And then, as an animated movie bump, probably be somewhere in the high 20s, low 30s next weekend. But no, I think that one of the newcomers is going to maybe more than one is going to beat it next weekend.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens at the box office for next week. But there's, this Alita: Battle Angel, was it on the shelf or something?
Well, it was supposed to come out. They've been actually like trying to make this movie since like 2004, from what I understand. Not that they started shooting it back then, but it was supposed to come out basically the same day as Aquaman.
Mm.
It was supposed to come out over the Christmas holidays, and a month or two beforehand, they got the better of themselves and they realized like, oh, we could be in trouble if this movie bombs over Christmas.
Yeah.
So let's move it a couple months ahead and build a little bit of buzz for it, and we'll see where it goes. But the movie cost somewhere between $150 and $200 million.
Yeah. Wow. All right. Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens next week. All right, Eric. Right. Thanks, man. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good.
All right, Eric Childress, everybody. Eric Childress, Jim Laskowski. They join me every Monday morning to review the movies. We'll do it again next week. And there you go. All right, let's take a quick break here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio, and we're here until 5 a.m. Nick DiGilio here on WGN. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke a little bit later on. Right now, though, we're going to talk about the Grammys. Did anybody watch the Grammys? Did you guys watch it? What did you think of the performances? And I've got the list of the winners here. So, Ben, by the way, Dan Shugrue is off. He's taking some time off. He's off this week, so Ben is going to be filling in this week. Ben, you didn't get a chance to see any of it. You've been here working.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been here since the wee hours of yesterday morning.
Ah, yeah. Okay. All right. Well, it was I will say this about the Grammys. It was long. I mean, long. It started at 7. And it ended at 10:45.
Oh yeah, that's really long.
Yeah, and you had your E red carpet, which I think started at around noon. You know, they get Seacrest out there, and they're out there for 3 hours before the show. So it was a long night for all the people who were there. Overall, I mean, like I said earlier, the Grammys really is not like other award shows in that they're mostly concerned with the performances, not so much, you know, the awards themselves. They only hand out a few awards during the Grammys. Mostly, it's about it's about the performances. And there were a ton of performances on the show. Some were good, some weren't. Like I said, for me, the best performance of the night was Brandi Carlile, who I really like a lot, and I thought she gave the best performance. And of course, you had your tributes there. Diana Ross turned 75, and she did she did your basic Diana Ross over the top performance. Her grandson introduced her. And he's 9, and he's got like an incredible head of hair, and he was really very, very funny. This kid. And then there was a tribute to Dolly Parton, which was great because Dolly Parton ruled.
That's the one I really want to go back and watch.
Yeah, it's you definitely should, because between her and Miley Cyrus working together, and then and just her singing this song called Red Shoes. She's great. I love Dolly. I love Dolly Parton. She's phenomenal. So, but overall, I did think it was way too long. And, they were cutting the speeches, people would get up there and win their award, and then they were just like really blasting the music and cutting the speeches. Which it was at that point, it's like, what, who, at this point, man, the show is like 4.5 hours long. What are you worried about the speeches for? So, but yeah, I mean, here are some of the winners. Some of these winners were surprising, I think. So like, for instance, Record of the Year went to This Is America by Childish Gambino, which I'm thrilled about because I love Childish Gambino, but Donald Glover wasn't there. That was the disappointing thing. It was like, they won some major awards. It won Record of the Year, and it won Song of the Year. So those are two major awards, and Donald Glover wasn't there. So it won This Is America, won Song of the Year, and it won Record of the Year. Album of the Year went to Golden Hour by Kacey Musgraves, who I was not very familiar with, but she's good. Best new artist went to Dua Lipa. Best solo pop solo performance went to Joanne, Where Do You Think You're Going? By Lady Gaga. Best pop duo or group performance went to Shallow by Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper. By the way, Lady Gaga's performance was weird. I mean, she is a bit of a weird performer in general. But it was very intense and crazy. She was wearing a weird silver, you know, like a glittery jumpsuit and making all kinds of weird faces and stuff. And I just was, I was a little confounded by her performance. And I really liked the song. I mean, obviously Shallow is a terrific song and it's probably going to win an Oscar in a couple of weeks, for her. But, yeah, she and Bradley Cooper, got the award for best pop duo or group performance. Best pop album went to Sweetener by Ariana Grande. Best rock performance went to When Bad Does Good by Chris Cornell. So did he have a backlog of new material? Is that what the deal is?
That's got to be what happened there.
Yeah.
Well deserved.
Well, yeah, I mean, he was the best.
Well deserved.
Best rock song went to Miseducation by St. Vincent. Best rock album, From the Fires by Greta Van Fleet. Best alternative music album was Colors by Beck. Best R&B performance. Best part by Her. Best urban contemporary album, Everything Is Love by The Carters. Best R&B album, Her by Her. Best rap performance, King's Dead, Kendrick Lamar, and Bubblin' by Anderson .Paak, or Pack, Anderson .Paak. Best rap song went to God's Plan by Drake. Best rap album went to Invasion of Privacy by Cardi B.
Hey Nick, so I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Would you truly consider Drake a rapper?
Yeah.
I just feel like he just talks over.
Yeah, no, he's like a rapper.
Hip hop.
Yeah, no, he's a rapper.
Yeah. I just never hear rapping when I compare it to like, and I get he's different and hands down, mad respect to him for being different and standing out. And everything I just compared to everything else that's out there, I just never think it's
he.
Rap.
And he's Canadian.
Well, yeah.
So, best music video went to This Is America, Childish Gambino. Man, oh, man. Donald Glover, man.
Yeah.
Winning some serious stuff. That video rules.
It was awesome.
Yeah. Well, the song is amazing, too. I love Childish Gambino. Hey, you know, Weird Al Yankovic won a Grammy.
That's two now.
For Squeeze Box, the complete works of Weird Al Yankovic, which is best boxed or special limited edition package. So it won for the packaging. Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, Weird Al Yankovic, what was it? Was it last year was the first time he won one?
I think it was 2 years ago.
2 years ago, but, yeah. But it took that long.
Yeah.
How did Weird Al not get, how did he not have a Grammy?
I mean, I have no idea.
How does he not have a room full of Grammys? So, I don't know. They got so many weird categories. That's the other thing about the Grammys is that there's like 7,000 awards. And they only hand out about six of them on the show. But there's like a million awards here. Best compilation soundtrack for visual media.
What?
That went to The Greatest Showman. Best soundtrack for visual media, Black Panther.
All right, that one has my vote, but I'm a Marvel fan.
Yeah. Well, the music for Black Panther is great.
I think, you know what, for all of those Marvel movies, the scores have been awesome.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, just really outstanding.
Let's see, best country song went to Space Cowboy. I guess it's Casey Musgraves. I'm assuming that's not the, it's not the Steve Miller song. I would imagine. Best traditional pop vocal album, My Way by Willie Nelson. Best country duo or group performance, Dan and Shay with Tequila. So those, you know, those guys performed last night.
Did they?
Yeah. And here's another thing. Whenever I watch like the Grammys or like music awards and stuff, especially the MTV, which I don't even try to watch anymore, the MTV Video Music Awards.
Oh, yeah.
Because I feel like I'm 106 years old. I have no idea who anybody is. Like when I was watching the Grammys last night, I'm like, I have no idea who that is. I've never heard this song before in my life. You know, I know who Dolly Parton and Diana Ross were, and Sam Smokey Robinson, I knew that. But yeah, you know, a lot of the stuff that's like, you know, younger, I don't know who the Shawn Mendes guy. He was okay. I believe he performed again. I think that was also with Miley Cyrus. Yeah, it was. That was with Miley Cyrus, too. She was all over the place last night. You know, I try to be as open-minded as possible, but I just, for the most part, I just kind of sit on my couch and go, I don't recognize anybody. I don't know who these people are. So, 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. If you watched, what did you think? What did you guys think of the ceremony? What did you guys think of the performances? Because there were a lot of performances. Let's see. Best, you've got bluegrass, you've got traditional blues. Buddy Guy won. The blues is alive and well. Best spoken word album, Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter got himself a Grammy. Best music film. How is that? When did that become a category?
I don't know, but I like it.
Best music film. I don't see. Wait a minute.
I feel like.
Bohemian. Oh, it's Quincy. From Quincy Jones.
Before I heard that, I just would have gone with Bohemian Rhapsody. But
yeah, I hated Bohemian Rhapsody. Ugh. So, yeah. And then also last night were the BAFTAs. Those are the British Film Awards. They were handed out as well at the same time, but I ended up watching the Grammys because I'd basically forgotten that the BAFTAs were being handed out. That's why Bradley Cooper wasn't at the Grammys. So when Lady Gaga got up to accept their award for their group or duo performance, she acknowledged that he was at the BAFTAs. So, 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. What performances did you think were good? There were a lot to choose from, too. So, yeah. Let's see. Best American Roots song was Brandi Carlile, The Joke. Which was my favorite performance of the evening. Best tropical Latin album, best regional roots music album. it just goes on and on and on. We can break whatever. All right. Well, there you go. Everybody, hang on. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk more. If you watched the Grammys, who did you think was what performances did you enjoy? Did you think that the winners were appropriate and all that cool stuff on the Grammys? 312-981-7200 is the phone number, and we'll talk more right after we break. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio. We're here until 5 a.m. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's Monday morning and that's what we're doing. And we're talking about the Grammys. If you watched the Grammys, what did you think of the performances? Who did you think was the standouts? And what did you think of the show overall? Like I said, it was very long. Very, very, very long. Too long, I think. Some of the performances were quite good, some not so much, and there were many artists that I didn't know because I'm old. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Here's Paula on WGN. Hi, Paula.
Hi. Yeah, I know what you mean. If it's not Tony Bennett, I need help.
Yeah.
There was a singer, maybe I should know who it is, and I'm going to be embarrassed by not knowing, but she was on about 10 to 10, 5 to 10, she finished, and she sang a song. She had a great voice, and then she really hit the high notes, and she sang a song that had, I went to the movies, or I was at the movies, was one of the lines. And
yeah, no, that was Brandi Carlile.
That was her. That
yeah.
When you mentioned that, I thought the... He must know, because that was, to me, the outstanding voice.
Oh, no, that was the best performance of the night. That was absolutely the best performance of the night, without question.
I'm totally unfamiliar. Who is she?
She's just a singer-songwriter. You know, she won a few Grammys in the in her specific category, which is Roots, American Roots album. And she's been around for a little while, but... No, she, I mean, she, as far as I'm concerned, she stole the show. That was, you know.
Yeah, because I just happened to in at that moment, and that voice really hit me, you know.
Yeah, no, she's great. I thought absolutely, without question, the best performance of the night. So.
Yeah, great. Now, this is my opinion of the show. I don't know, maybe it was just my mood and my coming in and out here and there, but. A lot of times I'm very excited by certain things I see on it, and I felt it was just a little lackluster. Was that me or my mood, or do you feel that some of it was?
Well, yeah, I mean, no, I mean, there were moments of it. Like I said, I just thought it was too long, way too long. And I just didn't, I mean, there were performances that I could have done without. And like I said, there were a few artists that I'd never even heard of before. So, but yeah, no, overall it was okay, just too long, and some of the performances stood out and some didn't. So,
right, I got you.
Okay,
well, good night.
Okay, Paula, take care.
I'll have something to watch tonight.
There you go. Okay, Paula, take care. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. We're talking about the Grammys. Did you watch the Grammys? What did you think? Here is Michael on WGN. Hi, Michael.
Hey, good morning, Nick. How you doing?
All right.
The entertainer that really ranked, I thought, was very good was Alicia Keys.
She was she was the host.
I thought she did. Yeah, she not only the host. She did a song with the two pianos.
Right.
And she kept jumping from it, and she hit the notes. She also sang with Smokey Robinson.
Right.
I thought, and she looked fabulous.
Yeah.
She just looked drop-dead gorgeous.
You know, I have to say, because she's can sing, man. There's no question about it. She can sing. I didn't think she'd get a good job as the host. Yeah, I mean, there were times when she was just kind of wandering around on the stage, and there were a couple of times when they came back from commercial, and she was just standing there, not talking. So, I mean, but listen, as a performer and as a singer, she did a remarkable job. And that set piece that she did, you know, with the two pianos was great. And there's no denying that that she has an enormous amount of talent and has a beautiful voice and can sing. I just didn't think she did a good job as a host. But, all right, Michael, thanks, man. Here's Tim on WGN. Hi, Tim.
Hey, how's it going?
All right, what's up?
Nick. Yeah, I agree with you about Alicia Keys. I mean, she's a great performer, got a great voice, but it seems like her effect is flat. She doesn't, like, pull any excitement. She flubbed her lines reading the teleprompter.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, there was no, you know, energy with her.
Yeah.
She's a great performer, but there's no energy with her.
As the host, though, I mean, she seemed high to me. I don't know if she was, if she was ripping bong hits in between commercials. I don't know.
Well, but she commented about what bong something
right.
was in the
Yeah, well,
the
that's because that's what's his face? The guy with the tattoos
yeah.
on his face.
Yeah, but
Project,
she might have been hanging out backstage with Miley Cyrus, you know, so you
yeah.
never know.
Yeah, it's true.
So, but she, as a host, she needs to stick to performing.
All right. Thank you, Tim.
Yeah, thank
right.
you.
Take care.
Right.
Yeah, I thought I was disappointed with her as a host. And she just appeared to be just like, I don't know. She looked, she seemed stoned to me. And, you know.
Was Snoop there? That might explain it.
I don't know if Snoop was there. I don't think he was. I'm not sure. But yeah, so she is beautiful, Alicia Keys, you know. And everybody talks about how she doesn't wear makeup anymore. Which I guess, you know, is supposed to be like a big deal. But she looks beautiful. She's really, I mean, so there was, you know, she was beautiful to look at. And when she sang, it was great. I just thought as a host, she seemed like distracted and or high or something. So, so yeah. So the big opening with the Havana, big, there's 75 people on stage, and they've this big, big, weird choreographed thing. The best part of that was Ricky Martin was the best part. He was like a special guest singing with, I can't remember what the artist's name is who did that Havana song, but she opened up the show, and there's like 25,000 dancers on stage, and everybody's dancing around. Ricky Martin stole the whole thing. And then later in the show, when they were cutting to, you know how they would always, they cut to the audience reacting to stuff all the time, and, you know, like performances, they'll cut to people. And it was funny, at one point they cut to Ricky Martin, who was reacting, and he had like a 14-pound scarf wrapped around his neck. And I was like, what? It's like, is it freezing in the Staples Center? I don't understand. It was like this giant, big scarf wrapped all the way around his neck. And I remember just thinking to myself, because it was just like a 2-second thing. You know what I mean? They just cut to him for a couple of seconds just to get like a reaction. And I was like, well, that's a heck of a scarf there, Ricky. So, yeah. All right. If you guys want to jump in here, 312-981-7200. Childish Gambino got the record of the year for This Is America, song of the year for This Is America, and then your album of the year went to Golden Hour by Casey Musgraves. And I guess that was a surprise. I think she seemed genuinely surprised. She seemed genuinely surprised when she got up there. So I'm very happy for Childish Gambino. I just wish Donald Glover would have been there. It would have been so much, and I wish he would have performed. That would have been awesome if he performed that. This Is America. So, all right. We're going to take a break here. We've got some news coming up, and then we're going to talk about, I got the BAFTA awards here too, so I'm going to go through those. And I got the listings of the BAFTA awards. Those are the British Film Awards. And I'll give you the winners on that and how that went. But the news is coming up right after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It's Monday. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And we're talking about the Grammys. We just got some texts in. Grammys were handed out last night. And again, as we've mentioned, the Grammys tend to be a show about performance, you know, and not so much about the awards, although the awards are fun. To be handed out, but that's mostly a showcase for the music, and it's been that way now for many years, where they just kind of like, it's not really as big an award show as it is a showcase of musicians and bands and stuff. And if you want to jump in, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We've got some texts. Let's see, 847 area code says, Dolly Parton tribute was great, but what the hell was Katy Perry doing there? She was horrible. Yeah, she was definitely the weak link on that stage. Was Katy Perry during the Dolly Parton tribute? She was definitely, without question, the weak link on stage. But I thought the Dolly Parton tribute was great because I love Dolly Parton, and she performed the heck out of her new song too. But yeah, Katy Perry, that seemed a little odd. That was odd. 630 area code says, about Weird Al's award, squeeze box is a term for an accordion. I know that. Thus, the double meaning in the creative box packaging. From what I understand, the whole package itself is shaped like an accordion. So I think you can actually squeeze it back and forth, if I'm not mistaken. So 807 area code says Sean Mendez is Canadian too. So thanks, Canadian Bill. All right. 405 area code says keys at times seemed a little awkward. Yeah, yeah. Like I said, I think she was blasting bong hits in between commercials. 219 area code says it's Mark from Hobart said, I enjoyed the Cardi B performance. However, I question with the hashtag Me Too movement, what would they would say about it? Is it any wonder there are so many pigs in Hollywood and mainstream music with blatant sexuality on display like that? The choreography was screaming sex all over. All the woman empowerment there must have been enraged, just saying. There was a, you know, that's just par for the course, man. You know? So I'm still trying to figure out what the deal was with Lady Gaga's performance. Not that she wasn't good, because she was, and I do like that song, Shallow, but I was just trying to figure out what was with the weird sort of intensity and the strange sort of like dance/head movements. I don't know. And she had like she changed costumes like three times. She changed costumes, and so did Alicia Keys. Alicia Keys, I think, changed costumes like five times. Everybody had different costumes. Like, they were on stage doing something. Next thing you know, they're in the audience. They got a completely different outfit on. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, Lady Gaga had like five different dresses on, or outfits. So, anyway. That's the Grammys. And it was really long. It was just really long. Now, up against the Grammys were the BAFTA Awards, and as we get closer to the Oscars, which are 2 weeks. Oscars are in 2 weeks. So now we're starting to figure out, you know, maybe who's going to win what and what category. And the BAFTAs sometimes are reflective of what's going to happen with the Academy Awards. So let's go through the winners of the BAFTA Awards from last night. Best Film, the nominees were Roma, Black Klansman, The Favorite, A Star is Born, and Green Book. And it went to Roma, Alfonso Cuarón's Roma, deservedly so. And then they have a special Outstanding British Film of the Year. And that was Bohemian. I didn't know Bohemian Rhapsody is a British film. I didn't know that. Brian Singer's not British. I guess the director of the movie. Well, he's a credited director. Stan and Ollie, Beast, McQueen, You Were Never Really Here, and then the winner went to The Favorite, which is one of my favorite movies of last year. Best Leading Actor nominees were Rami Malek, Christian Bale for Vice, Viggo Mortensen for Green Book, Bradley Cooper for A Star is Born, Steve Coogan for Stan and Ollie, and it went to Rami Malek. I think he's on his way to getting an Oscar. I think he's going to win the Oscar. And as I've said before, I personally think that Bohemian Rhapsody is the worst movie to ever be nominated for Best Picture. He's the best thing in it. There's no question about it. Without question, he's the best thing in the movie, but man, is it a terrible movie. Leading actress, the nominees were Olivia Colman, Lady Gaga, Viola Davis got a nomination for Widows, deservedly so. A movie that I gotta say, it's a damn shame that movie didn't catch on. I mean, it really is, because it's a terrific movie, and everybody in that movie was great, and nobody went to see it. Glenn Close and The Wife was nominated, Melissa McCarthy for Can You Ever Forgive Me, and it went to Olivia Colman.
Wait, that was all of them?
Yeah, there's five.
I just always expect Dame Judi Dench is going to be in there.
Yeah. I don't know if she made a movie this year. Did she make a movie this year? She probably did.
There's got to be one.
Yeah. Well, you know, this is the British one. I have a feeling that I think Glenn Close is going to win an Oscar. I think Glenn Close, she's never won one, which is unbelievable. Like, truly unbelievable that Glenn Close has never won an Academy Award. And she is phenomenal in The Wife. She's really, really good in it. Hmm. I just think that I don't think Lady Gaga is going to get it. I know that there's a real push to get the Oscar for Gaga. Olivia Colman is the actual, I think, the main competition to Glenn Close. I don't think it's Lady Gaga. I think the Academy is like, look, we gave you a nomination. You know.
Yeah.
And there you go.
Acknowledgement for the strive, you know.
Yeah.
Like,
but Glenn Close, man, I don't know. She's been, you know, been in the business for so many years, and not just the film business, but she's amazing on stage. She's she could sing, she could do it all. And I'm just stunned that she's never won an Academy Award.
Yeah, I'm really surprised to hear that.
Yeah. Supporting actor, Mahershala Ali, Richard E. Grant for Can You Ever Forgive Me, Timothy Chalamet for Beautiful Boy, Adam Driver for Black Klansman, Sam Rockwell for Vice, and it went to Mahershala Ali. I think that's inevitable. I think inevitably he's going to win. I think he's going to win supporting actor, and he's fantastic in Green Book. Fantastic. Actually, all of these guys are really good in their movies. Sam Rockwell's the only good thing about Vice. Adam Driver's fantastic in Black Klansman. Timothy Chalamet is beautiful in Beautiful Boy. And Richard E. Grant is Richard E. Grant. He's fantastic. These are the BAFTA Awards, again, the British Film Awards. Supporting actress, the nominees are Rachel Weisz, Claire Foy for First Man, Rachel Weisz for The Favorite, Margot Robbie for Mary, Queen of Scots, Amy Adams for Vice, and Emma Stone for The Favorite. And it went to Rachel Weisz for The Favorite. Didn't split the vote. They gave it to Rachel Weisz, not Emma Stone. Best Original Screenplay, the nominees were The Favorite, Green Book, Vice, Roma, and Cold War, and The Favorite won, beating out Roma, which is kind of a surprise. The BAFTA for Best Adapted Screenplay, the nominees were Black Klansman, Can You Ever Forgive Me, If Beale Street Could Talk, A Star Is Born, and First Man. Nice to see First Man getting some acknowledgement from the British press there. And the winner was Black Klansman. Best Adapted Screenplay, Black Klansman. Best Cinematography, Roma, Cold War, The Favorite, Bohemian Rhapsody, and First Man, and it went to Roma, deservedly so. Best Editing, Vice, First Man, The Favorite, Bohemian Rhapsody, and Roma, and it went to Vice, which I find surprising. Yeah, find that surprising. Production Design, The Favorite, First Man, Roma, Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald, Mary Poppins Returns, and it went to The Favorite. Boy, The Favorite really cleaning up at the British Film Awards here at the BAFTAs. Best Costume Design, The Favorite, Mary Poppins Returns, The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, Bohemian Rhapsody, and Mary Queen of Scots, and it went to The Favorite. And Original Music, Star is Born, If Beale Street Could Talk, Mary Poppins Returns, Black Klansman, and Isle of Dogs, and it went to Star is Born. Best Makeup and Hair, The Favorite, Mary Queen of Scots, Vice, Bohemian Rhapsody, Stan and Ollie, and it went to The Favorite. Jeez. Cleaning Up, Best Sound, Bohemian Rhapsody, Star is Born, Mission Impossible Fallout, A Quiet Place, and First Man. And it went to Bohemian Rhapsody, inexplicably, because it should have gone to A Quiet Place. Because the use of sound in that movie was absolutely brilliant. That was a movie. Have you seen A Quiet Place, Ben?
Not yet.
Oh, man. It's really good.
I am so far behind.
It's really creepy and really, really good. Have you seen Mission Impossible Fallout?
No. And that would be one I normally would be there opening night for.
That, the thing about the Mission Impossible movies, this is insane. They keep getting better.
That's what I keep seeing.
You know, this last one's the best one. This is the sixth movie in that series. It's the best. I mean, it's nonstop action. It's ridiculous. I mean, and Tom Cruise is nuts. Doing all his own, doing all these crazy stunts. He busted his ankle making. He broke his ankle making this movie. And you know the fact, you know the intensity with which he, you know, he appears in these movies. These Mission Impossible movies are great. They're just great, and the Fallout is fantastic. Best achievement in special visual effects: Black Panther, Fantastic Beasts, Ready Player One, Avengers: Infinity War, and First Man, and it went to Black Panther. Best film not in the English language: Roma, Cold War, Shoplifters, Dogman, and Capernaum, and it went to Roma. Best animated feature film: Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, Isle of Dogs, and Incredibles 2, and that went to Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, which is actually one of the most surprising movies of the year. Like, that came out of nowhere. That movie came out of nowhere.
That was one of my favorites that I did get to see.
Yeah. I just remember when I first heard about it, I was like, an animated Spider-Man movie? How come that's not going straight to video?
Mm-hmm.
And then I saw it, and I was like, oh, it's great. So... All right, we got a few more categories here. If you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. Previewing the Oscars, which are coming up in a couple of weeks, by checking out the BAFTAs. And if you've got anything to say or comment, it's 312-981-7200. Okay, we'll be right back. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It's Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And we were talking about the Grammys, which we watched last night, and talked about some of the performances and the winners. And I'm looking at the Weird Al Yankovic won the packaging award for his squeeze box, the complete works of Weird Al, and it's really amazing, the packaging. It really is. I mean, it's an actual, like, accordion. It comes with a special collector's book, and if you look at this thing, it's pretty unbelievable. So deservedly so, Weird Al got the Grammy for the squeeze box. So and then we were talking about the BAFTA awards, which were handed out some last night, and that's the British Film Awards. And we got a few more categories here to talk about. Best documentary went to Free Solo. Let's see. You got animated short film, the David Lean Award for Direction. Alfonso Cuarón for Roma. Paul Pawlowski for Cold War. Yorgos Lanthimos for The Favorite, Bradley Cooper for A Star Is Born, and Spike Lee for Black Klansman. And that's went to Alfonso Cuarón. The Academy Fellowship Lifetime Award went to Thelma Schoonmaker. Thelma Schoonmaker is Martin Scorsese's longtime editor. She's one of the greatest editors ever. And she's been working with Scorsese, oh my God, I can't even tell you how many years. So, and then the EE Rising Star went to Letitia Wright, who had a great year. So that's your British. Those are your British things. Obviously, they like The Favorite, but Roma won the big one. And it'd be interesting to see what happens with these Academy Awards. I'll tell you something, man. As this award season rolls on, I still can't believe that this is the first time that Spike Lee's been nominated for Best Director. I still can't believe that. I mean, seriously. How has he not been nominated? How was he not nominated for, like, Malcolm X or Do the Right Thing? I mean, I don't understand that. I mean, when I found out it was his first, because I was surprised. So it's like, oh, I knew he was going to get nominated. Black Klansman is the best movie he's made in a long time.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that.
And it's a really terrific movie, and it's the best. I think it's the best movie Spike Lee's made in years. And then when the Oscar nominations come out, I was not surprised that you know that the amount of nominations that it got, because it totally deserves it. But then when they were talking, they interviewed Spike Lee, and they're like, "Yeah, it's your first nomination." I was like, "What? Amazing!"
Yeah, I totally thought he, you know, at least had the nomination for Malcolm X.
Well, that's what I thought too. I mean, I thought, oh yeah, well, he had to get nominated for Malcolm X.
Yeah,
it's crazy. All right. So those are your nominations. Those are your winners and your nominees for the BAFTA Awards. Just getting ready to handicap what's going on with the Academy Awards. We got to get those in there. 312-981-7200 if you want to jump in. Here's Mike on WGN. Hi, Mike.
Hi there. I have not seen any of the current crop of movies except one that you mentioned, A Quiet Place.
Mm-hmm.
But that was all... I don't know which ones to go see. I detest Lady Gaga. I'm not going to spend money to see her. I never was a big fan of Queen, but I didn't dislike him either. I don't know which ones to go see at the local movie theater. What do you recommend?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, personally, I think the best movie of the year, my number one movie of the year, was Roma, Alfonso Cuarón's movie about his childhood in Mexico, which you can actually see on Netflix. that was the best movie of last year. I also really loved Green Book a lot. I think Green Book is a very entertaining movie with Viggo Mortensen and Mahershala Ali. We were just talking about Black Klansman, the Spike Lee movie. Great film.
Where would you see Black Klansman at? I mean, I don't think it's playing anywhere in the theaters right now. Is it?
You know what? It's video on. You can see it on video on demand. It's available on video on demand. And you know what, Mike? You know what typically happens is this is, you know, usually happens every year. As we get closer to the Academy Awards, they do re-release the main nominees. And in fact, I think it's the weekend before the Academy Awards, most of the theaters show the movies on the big screen. Unfortunately, they can't show Roma. The theaters are boycotting Roma. So, like, if you want to see Roma, you're gonna have to watch it on Netflix, because they'll re-release Black Klansman. They'll re-release all the movies that are nominated will get re-released, and you can probably see them at your local theater. But for some reason, because it's a Netflix movie, they're not gonna have Roma in the movie theaters, which is the way to see it. Actually, I mean, if you can't make it, well, you can't get out to a theater to see it. Maybe they'll re-release it at the Music Box, because the Music Box showed it in 70mm right after it came out, and that's the way to see the movie. I mean, it's if you can't get out to a theater or get out to the Music Box to see Roma, by all means, watch it on Netflix, because it's a great film and it just should be watched. But yeah, so they, Mike, they do re-release these movies, so you get a chance to see a lot of these. Just keep your eyes peeled, and I think it's the week before the Oscars, all of the major nominees will be released again in the movie theater, and they set it all up perfectly. They have these marathons where you can watch, like, because there's eight movies I think it's nominated for this year. Eight movies I think are nominated for Best Picture. So they have these marathons, like a two-day marathon, where they'll show four movies in one day and then four movies in the next day. And then, you get a break for lunch. And I know a lot of people who do this, who go to the theater every year to do the big marathon, you know, because there's a lot of completists out there who want to see all the movies and all the performances that are nominated. And a lot of people go out and do that, and so that's a way to do it, Mike. So in a couple of weeks, if you're still interested in seeing some of these new movies or some of the nominated films, you'll have a chance. You'll have a chance to see it. Mike, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. So you haven't seen anything, huh?
No, unfortunately.
Uh-huh. Now, did you see Avengers, though, right?
Oh, yeah. That one I saw.
Yeah. I figured you did.
Yeah, those are the ones I don't miss. Sleep or no sleep.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting to see. You know, because I guess the end game is 3 hours. It's going to be 3 hours long.
That's my mecca right there.
It's going to be 3 hours long. Wow,
looking forward to it.
So basically, the Avengers last. Basically, the final Avengers is a 5.5-hour movie essentially.
Pretty much.
Because it's this is 3 hours and the other one was 2.5 hours.
Yep.
Jeez. All right. Well, we'll see what happens. Okay, let's take a break here. We got the news coming up next here on WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How's it going? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 o'clock. Hey, Brad Zibung, who works for The Heckler, he and Sarah Spain are husband and wife and into sports, and they do the anchoring and stuff like that. Sarah's been on the show several times. Brad's been on a bunch of times, too. He's one of the guys who works with The Heckler, the Cubs Heckler. And he actually posted something on his Facebook page called The Most Memorable Sporting Events That I've Seen Live. And that's what I want to talk about. I'm going to read some of his, and I want to hear from you guys. Have you ever been to some sporting events? What are the most memorable sporting events that you've ever been to live? 312-981-7200. So give us a call now. What were the most memorable that you were there? 312-981-7200. We got some texts here. 309 area code says, Pete Townsend wrote squeeze box in reference to the female sex organ. Yeah. And, yeah. 847 says, I saw Roma on the marquee at the Pickwick in Park Ridge. Oh, awesome. Okay. Tom from Norwood Park says, I don't know her name. Young woman with a guitar and backup dancers seemed like a Prince ripoff. That was Janelle Monáe. And I thought she was terrific. I thought she was really good. And she, yes, obviously she was, you know, she was channeling her inner Prince. There's no question about it. And I don't think she apologized for, I don't think she needs to apologize for it anyway. But it was, I thought it was real. It's Janelle Monáe. I thought she was great.
I haven't seen, you know, like we talked about, I haven't seen last night's performances, but I think she's an outstanding performer.
She is. Yeah. She's also a terrific actress. You know, she was in Welcome to Marwen, which about four people saw. That was one of my favorite movies of last year. But, so, anyway. So there you go. That's the Grammys. Now, let's talk about some sporting events that you guys went to that meant so much to you. The most memorable sporting events that you've ever seen. And this is Brad Zibung wrote about this. Does anything pop into your head, Ben, that you were live?
Yeah, I've got a few. I shared one of them with you last week when I was in first baseball game I ever went to. Being a Cubs fan, I was mad at the first game I ever went to
because
it was the White Sox, but it was in Oakland, and I saw the Oakland A's and the White Sox in '87.
Right,
so it was pretty outstanding to see some players back then.
Yeah,
not realizing how big they were going to become later.
Right.
But my biggest was definitely when I was a freshman in college initially, some time ago, and I went to school in Daytona Beach.
Mm-hmm.
So my dorm room looked straight across onto the racetrack, the Daytona Speedway.
Oh, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And because of my role with athletics at the university, I had to do a bunch of promotional events over at the racetrack. And I had tickets for the Daytona 500 that year, and I was sitting turn four when Earnhardt hit the wall.
Oh, wow.
So I was there. And at the time, Earnhardt was a name I knew, you know, but didn't know how
right
big and significant
right
it was at that moment.
Wow. Okay. Let's see. Brad's got some. He says, I've had a good fortune to attend several hundred live sporting events, and here are the most memorable. He has six of them altogether. Hawks clinched Stanley Cup at the United Center in 2015. That was a really cool thing for Sarah and me to experience together. There wasn't a lot of drama in the game, and I remember, and it was the third cup they'd won since 2010, so it doesn't chart as high as some of the other games that I've been to. Yeah, I was not feeling well, at all, and I was offered tickets to that game. I could have been there, but I wasn't feeling well. So that was it was just so great for them to, you know, well, first of all, win the third cup in that time period. You know, three cups in 5 years. It's pretty. That's pretty impressive. Very impressive. And also to win it at home. That was, you know,
that was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was in your neighborhood when that all happened.
You were in
Wrigleyville.
In Wrigleyville.
Yeah.
My old neighborhood.
Yeah, your old neighborhood.
Yeah, I don't live there now.
Yeah.
But the Bulls beat the Celtics in three OT playoff games. Three overtime playoff game on April 30th, 2009. We lucked into courtside seats opposite the Bulls bench for what wound up being, has to be one of the best playoff games of all time. You can occasionally see the backs of our head here. Huge shots throughout the game. Ray Allen went off for 51. Joakim Noah had a huge steal that he went coast to coast on for an emphatic dunk. Eventually, Roy D. Rose was huge throughout. It was just awesome. Special bonus. Drew, my friend, got a high five from Noah after the game, and that was being used in the NBA promos for a few years. So, sporting events that you went to that were really memorable. How about this one? Super Bowl 51 from 2007. Sadly, work at StubHub had me in the parking lot for the first quarter, so I missed Devin Hester's return. It was a good game that the Bears should have won. Prince's halftime performance was incredible and the most memorable part for me. The post-game bedlam at a nearby Walmart while hundreds of game attendees tried to buy up as much dry clothes as possible was pretty creepy. This is the only Super Bowl I've been to, and unless there's a compelling reason to get back to another, I'm in no rush. Yeah, I remember watching that game over at my folks' house. And the Hester's run at the beginning of that game, man, that was just insane. And then it was kind of all downhill from there, except for Prince. And that's, you know, I mean, that's one of the greatest halftime shows of all time. How about this one? The Packers-Bears instant replay game at Lambeau, November 1989, growing up about an hour from Green Bay. I was a massive Packers fan prior to moving to Chicago. Yes, it's true. The Bears were so good throughout the 80s, and my Packers were mostly terrible. The 1989 Cardiac Pack was changing that with a string of last-minute wins and was in the playoff hunt for the first time since the strike-shortened 1982 season. A few weeks before the game, my dad Valentine and I were at the Saints-Packers game. The Packers were trailing and lined up to punt, so we took off because my dad wanted to beat traffic. I didn't want to leave, and then, sure enough, the Packers faked the punt and wound up scoring the go-ahead touchdown to win the game. I threw the kind of fit that you would expect a 12-year-old to do, and was a complete a-hole to my dad about his questionable decision. When the Packers were driving late and down by 6 to the Bears a few weeks later, we knew that we were staying for the end of it, no matter how terrible traffic was going to be to get out of there. You have to watch this play. It's an insane play, an insane thing to be a part of. Still, it makes me misty-eyed. How about this one? Number 2, the Bartman game in 2003. I was in the left field, well about 30 yards from the eventual Bartman incident, with a few dozen bleacher regulars, most of whom had waited decades upon decades for the Cubs to reach the World Series. They'd become good friends over the previous seasons. It was also the year that George Ellis and I launched The Heckler, along with lots of other good and new friends. It was just an insane time to be around Wrigley. Once the game reached the eighth, we were all going ballistic and just insane every time everyone in the stadium got ahead of themselves, starting to count the number of outs left for the Cubs. Will they finally reach the World Series? Well, you all know how it ended. I remember immediately feeling terrible for the fans who'd interfered with the ball because it wasn't their fault. Dusty didn't go to the mound. It wasn't their fault. Gonzalez booted a routine double play ball. The Cubs still should have won that game. This was before Bartman was outed and vilified. We always try to take it easy on him in the heckler because I will ever forget. I will always feel bad for the guy. Still, it was an amazing game to be at. And then the Cubs-Indians game 7, 2016, no-brainer. Thinking about it still gives me the goosebumps. Probably the best game I'd ever even been to without context. Honorable mention, Cody Parkey's doink game against the Eagles. How many people were out there at that game and the Bartman game at the same time? Cubs clinch the NL Central against the Pirates in 2003. Cubs clinch the National League title in 2016. Bears clinched the NFC Championship in 2007. 2003 MLB All-Star Game at Cellular Field. Cubs spring training opening day 2016. And I got to throw out the first pitch. I'm sure there are many more, but those are the ones that are off the top of my mind. I've never seen a no-hitter live, which is a little surprising because I've been to 300 baseball games. Wow. So there you go. That's Brad and his thoughts. And I want to hear from you guys. We got some lines open. What were some of the most memorable sporting events that you've been to live? 312-981-7200. All right, we got a break here for the weather, and then I want to get back to you guys talking about your favorite sports live, most memorable sporting events. Welcome back. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio, and we're talking about sporting events, most memorable sporting events that you were that you've been to live. And we got the phone lines are open right now, so get in here and tell us about some of the most memorable sporting events that you've been to. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Here's Brian on WGN. Hi, Brian.
Hey, hello, Nick. How are you doing?
All right.
Yeah. You know what? One of the most memorable ones I've ever seen happened in 1985-86 Bears. My friend Joey and I, we flew down on Eastern Airlines. I saw this ad in the Sun-Times, and this is how it all got started. He was the used car manager, and I was a salesman at a dealership, all right? And we flew down there, rented a car, nice Mercury Capri and whatnot, and then even took a boat over to the Bahamas. Then we went to the Orange Bowl, all right, where, and we were staying right next to it in the penthouse. And we walk over to the Orange Bowl, and we watched the Bears, you know. They were undefeated that year in the Super Bowl year, the last time they won it, and they lost that game. And it was so disappointing because, you know what, man, they could have been undefeated and they would have been greater than the Miami Dolphins at that point.
Yeah, well, you know, that's interesting that that's the only game that they lost that year. The 85 Bears, and you were there. That's pretty memorable. You went all the way down to Miami to see him lose. But yeah, I remember watching that game. I obviously wasn't there, but that's a pretty memorable game to be at. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Thank you, Brian. Thank you for the call, my friend. Let's see. 619 area code. I want to hear from you guys. What are your the most memorable sporting events that you saw live? Maybe historical sporting events or things that will stick with you that you were really unbelievably happy to be in that stadium or to see it live. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. 619 area code says, at the game when Walter Payton broke the rushing record. Oh, that's pretty cool. 630 area code says, May 17th, 1979, Wrigley Field, Cubs lost to the Phillies 22-23 as a school trip. That is a legendary game. Legendary game. I remember watching that game, too. Incredible. 630 area code says I was at the Cubs' first night game. All right, well, here's the thing. Were you there for the rainout, or were you actually there for the actual game? Because, you know, the first night game got rained out, if you remember correctly, and then they didn't play it. They didn't play the actual night game again until the next night. I was at both. And I just remember, the old guy who hit the switch to turn the lights on. Yeah, it was 8/8/88. That was the date. 8/8/88. But then they didn't play until 8/9/88 because of the rainout. But yeah, it only makes sense that game got rained out. You wait all these years for, you know, the Cubs finally get the lights at Wrigley Field, and you know, a lot of people were opposed to it. You know, we lived in the neighborhood, not at that time, but we lived in the neighborhood. I grew up in that neighborhood, right by Wrigley Field. I grew up like 6 blocks away from Wrigley Field. And I remember as a kid, and I don't know if people still have these signs, that the no lights at Wrigley. Do you guys remember those signs? People would put them in the window in the neighborhood. People would have it in the window because they didn't want lights at Wrigley. And there were signs everywhere. The no lights at Wrigley Field signs were everywhere in that neighborhood. But then in 1988, the lights came to Wrigley. It was weird too to see them on top. It was just so strange. I remember being there and you know, having grown up blocks away from Wrigley, and you know, only obviously just going, you know, having day games and stuff. It was just very, very strange to see those things on top of the roof at Wrigley. It was weird. It was hard to get used to, man. Very hard to get used to. So, but yeah, Cubs' first night game. What about you guys? 312-981-7200 is the phone number. There's Roscoe on WGN. Hi, Roscoe.
Hi, Nick. Love your show. I'm also known as 804. I was living in Chicago at the time that Michael Jordan first retired, before they started to play at the United Center. And he had retired, and I forget how many months after, there was going to be a charity game at the Chicago Stadium sponsored by some phone companies, the last basketball game at the Chicago Stadium. And everybody was wondering, I wonder if Jordan's going to show up, if he's going to show up. And the day before, I believe, he announced that he would play that game. Well, of course, I had 4 tickets because I was treating some coworkers to the game. They were $15 when I bought them. They shot up tremendously, but we, of course, wanted to go because it was such a memorable game. And he did play, and at the end, he got down on his hands and knees, and he kissed the Bulls logo.
Oh, wow.
On the Chicago Stadium floor.
Wow.
Which, of course, drove the audience wild. And it appeared, I believe, on all the I think the Sun-Times had it on their front cover the next day. So
that's
was
amazing.
Tremendous. It was amazing.
Yeah.
And then, of course, he went out of retirement later. He first had vowed that he would never play in the United Center, and then, of course, he came out of retirement and played quite a while. So
yeah, I remember that. Okay, thank you, Roscoe. Yeah. That's a great story.
You're welcome. Bye.
Remember when Jordan played for the Sox? I remember the big announcement that he was going to try. You know, he was going to try his hand at baseball. I remember thinking this is just the most ridiculous thing. But then, of course, I did think, well, if anybody can do it, it'll be him. Like if one of the greatest athletes that's ever set foot on this planet, I wouldn't be surprised if he was great at baseball. I mean, you know what I mean? If the guy could do anything.
Yeah, yeah.
And he turned out to be human.
My favorite, watching some of the golfing videos. I mean,
yeah,
man, he could play.
Yeah. Let's see. We got a bunch of texts coming in. And if you guys want it, our phone lines are open, too. What about your favorite sports that you saw live? The most memorable sports events that you've been to live? 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Let's see, 708 area code says, for my 21st birthday, Walter Payton rushed 274 yards in one game. That was on November 20th, 1977. That's a pretty nice little birthday gift. 708 area code says Danny Joe All-Star game at the first. The national anthem was chilling. The game was great. I'll never forget it. That's John Berg's Tommy. My dad took my brother and I to our first Cubs game in 1969. Ken Holtzman pitched a no-hitter. I've never seen a no-hitter. Never. Have you ever seen a no-hitter live?
Never.
Yeah, I've never seen a no-hitter either. We were going to go up to Milwaukee. I told you this story already. We were going to go up to Milwaukee.
Oh, yeah.
To see Zambrano and the Cubs pitch, but I didn't because Ron Santo told me never to go to Milwaukee. So when Ron Santo tells you never to go to Milwaukee to see the Cubs play, you don't go to Milwaukee to see the Cubs play. So we missed out on Zambrano's no-hitter. 773 area code, Cubs doubleheader 2003 to get into the playoffs. First game at Wrigley after 9/11. First game at the stadium, Pippen and Grant's rookie year.
Ooh, I like that one.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty good. 630 area code says, Snow Bowl, Soldiers Field, Fridge throwing Peyton over the goal line for the TD. Asked my dad if that's legal. Um, 779 area code says, my son Bodie, walk-off grand slam against Washington, was an excellent pitcher's duel. 630 area code, I was there for the actual night game. That would be 8988. And then someone just, 312 area code, just simply texted the Cork Lounge. The Cork Lounge? Why? By the way, that the Cork Lounge, directly across the street from where I grew up. I grew up in the greenhouse right next door to the Ravenswood Brown Line stop, which is right directly across the street from the Cork Lounge. That's where I spent the first 18 years of my life, right across the street from the Cork Lounge. I don't know if anybody...
Wow.
Yeah. I don't know what that has to do with your favorite live sports event, but anyway, there you go. Cork Lounge.
I mean, I can maybe attest to this particular listener that some of my favorite moments in Wrigleyville weren't exactly in or on Wrigley Field.
Yeah. So, it's true. All right, we're going to break here. We got the news coming up next, and then we'll talk more about the sporting events and some other stuff, too. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. So the news is coming up right after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 o'clock. And, yeah, how's everybody doing? We're talking about sporting events that are very memorable that you went to. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. We'd love to hear from you. And here till 5 o'clock, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. The great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. And, yeah. So, I'm trying to remember some of the other... I mean, I went to a lot of Hawks playoff games. Those are always pretty memorable. Especially when they move on, you know, like in the playoffs. And I'm trying to think of some of the other... I remember a hockey game I went to. A Hawks game years ago, and it was against Minnesota, and this was when Dino Cicerelli was on the team. He was a real goon, Dino Cicerelli, and so we got there really early, and I remember this is at the old stadium, so we got there early, and at this time, Minnesota was a pretty big rival with the Hawks. And so we got there really early, and my friends were like, it was sort of my insistence that we got there as early as we did. And they were all like, you know, man, why are we here so early? This is so stupid. I mean, we got there even before the practice skate. So we were there super early, and there weren't a lot of people there at that point yet. And we were up in the nosebleeds where we always sat when we went to hockey games at the old stadium. We always sat up in the upper balcony because that was the best place to sit. It was insane up there. It was absolutely insane. If you've ever gone to the old stadium, the old barn, to see, you know, Hawks games, you know what it was like up there in the balconies up there. It was pretty crazy. But anyway, we were there, and all of a sudden, they come out, this Minnesota comes out and the Hawks come out, and they come out and do the practice skate. And the next thing you know, a brawl breaks out. And so we're like, oh my God, what's going on? And like everybody was fighting, like everybody. I mean, it was a massive brawl. I'm sure there are people out there who probably remember this. But there was this massive brawl where everybody was beating the hell out of each other. There were gloves and there were skates all over, and there were gloves and sticks all over the ice, and the two teams just beating the hell out of each other. And then my friends were like, suddenly they were happy that they were there early. And the other insane thing about this was that there were no officials on the ice, so nobody was there to break it up. So like, this was just the pregame skate. There were no officials on the ice, no refs, no linesmen, nothing. So it's just the team. It was like something out of Slapshot.
I was just going to say, aren't you just describing?
It was like, I'm not kidding. It was like something out of Slapshot. And I remember, I mean, I'll never forget that. That was a blast. And my friends were, you know, suddenly they were like, oh, I'm glad we got here early, man. You know, before they were really mad because I insisted that we got there early. But then, you know, we wouldn't have seen this insane brawl. And it went on for a long time, too. I mean, they finally did send people out on the ice to get these guys to stop beating the hell out of each other. But again, you know, this was before the game, so there were no penalties involved or anything like that. So that was pretty memorable. That was a pretty memorable one. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We got some texts coming in. Let me get to those in a minute, but let's talk to Dan on WGN. Hi, Dan.
Hey, how you doing?
All right,
hey,
what's
up? I was at that game, that Hawks game. That was Dino Cicerelli and LC Cord that started hammering each other.
Yeah, yeah. Wasn't that unbelievable?
Yeah, because I used to have season tickets, but yeah, I was at that game. We always got there early.
Yeah. Yeah, no. I mean, you know, I like to get to the games early, too, when I go to a Hawks game. I always like to get there early, and but my friends were, for some reason, they were like, yeah, why are we here so early? And they were, you know, they were moaning about it. And then, you know, of course, when the brawl starts, then they were like, oh, this is great.
Yeah, well, I always got there early because I wanted to get a good parking spot so I could get in and out of there right after the game.
Right.
But the game I was talking about that I was at Joe Namath's last game. It was at they played the Bears. He was on the Rams. And I think it was Hartenstein that knocked him out of the game. He only played like two plays in that game. But the funny part about that game was it started to rain. It was a Monday night game, and we were a 50-yard line, probably maybe 40 rows up. Somebody opens up a beach umbrella about four rows in front of us. You should have seen the fight. The guy just grabbed it. He told him to put it away about five times. The guy just grabs the umbrella, fights it, starts ripping it, and then it was everything was on.
Oh, man.
About six people going at it. that was one of the most memorable games I was ever at. I don't care much go to football, but I got free tickets for that one, and I was glad I went to that one.
That's great. That's crazy. Yeah. That's crazy. All right, Dan, take care, buddy.
All right.
See ya.
Take care.
Yep. here's John on WGN. Hi, John.
How you doing?
All right.
I went to see the Bulls and the Knicks in a playoff game. It's the only time I ever saw Michael Jordan and the Bulls at the old stadium with all that concrete echoing.
Yeah.
We were there like an hour before trying to sell an extra ticket we had for $125. We bought them for $125. Nobody would buy them. And this real tall African-American guy asked me what I had, and I said, show him the ticket. He goes, so I only got $70. He opened up his wallet and showed me. I said, no, I want $125, but he kept following us. It was about 15 minutes before the game, so we sold him the ticket. I sit down. There's a white guy in the seat where I sold the tickets. So I asked the guy, I said, do you mind if I ask you who you bought that ticket from? He said, yeah, it was a real tall black guy. I said, how much did you pay for it? He said, $125. Then when we were there, the thing that was great about it was there's these little African-American kids selling posters outside for $1 to all the players.
Mm-hmm.
When you walked inside, they were giving away for free. So they just run in and get a free poster, run out and get a dollar.
Wow, a lot of money-making schemes going on over there.
Chicago.
That's right.
And then another thing was, when I was outside, of course, I'm a country bumpkin from Decatur. I asked the cop, I said, it was a Sunday afternoon. I said, where can I go to get a disposable camera? This is like 93 or whatever. And he looked at me right now and I go, sir, he said, this is the west side of Chicago. You stay on this block, you understand? One more thing about the game. I'll never forget this sound. When they introduced the players, it was so loud, you know, you could barely hear each other if you were yelling. But when they introduced Michael Jordan, I have never heard this sound in my life. It just sounded like a buzz, like bees buzzing in your ear.
Yeah.
That's all you could hear.
Yeah.
It was wild.
Crazy. All right, John, thanks, man.
Thank you.
All right, there you go. Yeah, the old, you know, did you ever go to the? Did you ever go to the old stadium, the old Chicago Stadium?
No, I never.
You never went there? Oh man, the place was legendary, man. Legendary, nothing like it. We got some texts here. 312 area code says, "I signed petitions against the lights. Cubs should move out to the suburbs. Enough nonsense. What are you talking about? What's the matter with you?" There were a lot of people who were against the lights, though. I know that much because, I mean, I grew up in that neighborhood. 630 area code says, Sunday, September 14th, 2008, the anniversary of finding you, Nick, on WGN when driving home from Milwaukee after seeing Zambrano pitch its no-hitter. You were so excited, and we found you incredibly fun to listen to on the radio, and we've listened ever since. That day was my husband's 40th birthday, and it was the best birthday gift ever. Also, I was at the Justin Hayward walk-off Grand Slam in June of 2018. All right. 815 area code, NASCAR, final lap when Carl Edwards hit the fence and continued to roll airborne along the fence vertically, not far from our seats. At Talladega, Edwards got out of the car and ran to the finish line to finish the race. It's amazing how these guys who are in these, like, crazy flip accidents just get up and get out of the car. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Yeah, I'm just that's nothing to it. No big deal. The car just flipped 50 times in the middle of the air, in midair, and then this guy gets out. It's crazy. It's crazy. All right. Let's take a break here real quick. Everybody hang on. We got a couple of lines open if you want to jump in. Get your texts or your calls in right now. We're talking about your favorite, most memorable sporting events that you saw live. 312-981-7200. All right. Welcome back. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It's Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And we'll get that coming up. But right now, though, we're talking about sporting events, most memorable sporting events that you were at, that you attended live. And we've got a whole bunch of people who are calling in, a bunch of texts, and sharing your sports moments that you saw live. 312-981-7200. Here's Bob on WGN. Hi, Bob.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. What's up?
Oh, I had the good fortune of going to the 67 Detroit Tigers versus St. Louis Cardinals World Series.
Mm.
It was the fifth game, and I got tickets because the Tigers were down 3-1 games, and it was a memorable series because Denny McClain, who had won 31 games that season, squared off against Bob Gibson, who had an earned run average of between 1 and 2.
Mm.
And in that fifth game, the Tigers won it. And they went on to win the next three games, and they won the World Series.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, that's memorable stuff right there.
Boy, I'll say.
Yeah. All right, Bob, thanks for the call.
You're welcome.
Okay. Here's John on WGN. Hi, John.
Hello, me?
Yeah.
Yeah, hello. This was the final season of the old Comiskey Park, whatever year that was. So I went in late August to see one final game at the old Comiskey, and that was the night that they brought up a minor league player by the name of Frank Thomas.
Wow.
In his first two at-bats, he had a ground out and a fly out. His third at-bat, he hit a triple.
Wow. That was the night they brought up Thomas. Okay, there you go. Yep.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, take care. That's amazing that it was the last game at Comiskey. So Frank Thomas got to play at the old Comiskey. Well, that's pretty cool. All right. More texts come in if you want to jump in. We're talking about sporting events that were very memorable that you were you witnessed live. 715 area code says, I was at Holtzman's no-hitter in 69 as an Andy Frame was stationed atop the Cubs' dugout when it was over. Also saw Princeton upset the defending national champ UCLA in Indianapolis in 94. Was at St. Louis when the Red Sox ended the curse of the Bambino and won the World Series in 04. Oh, wow. All right. 219 area code says, the day the Cubs retired Santo's number, I was there for that, too. The game was meaningless, but the hanging of Santo's number was amazing. I was there for that, too. That was really something. 813 area code says, 1996 Cigar Challenge at Arlington Park, the 2002 Breeders' Cup at Arlington. Two 231 area code says, in 2017, I saw the Detroit Tigers and Anaheim Angels take a perfect game for both teams into the sixth inning. That's exciting. That's pretty exciting. 847 area code says, WWE Money in the Bank pay-per-view Cena versus CM Punk. The crowd had an electricity like I've never felt, and I experienced WrestleMania 22. Epic. I've been to some fun wrestling events, I got to say. Some pay-per-views and stuff. Bob J. says, I remember being at Disco Demolition when I was 16. I was 14, and I was there. I've talked about this many times, about actually being at Disco Demolition. It was absolute insanity. Absolute insanity. Boy, yeah, I was 14 years old. All right, what else we got here? Here's Ron on WGN. Hi, Ron.
Good morning, Nick. Nick, right. It was the championship game with the Bears versus New York Giants at Wrigley Field, and it was a frozen game. And me and my uncle, we had two standing room only tickets, and those were actually the best seats because it was so cold. The only way to keep warm was keep moving, drinking hot chocolate, and eating Smoky Links.
Right,
but I can't remember. I think it was 62 where the Bears knocked out Whitey Tittle and he was on the sidelines after the game with his helmet off and on his knees and his head bleeding.
Oh, man.
And then later on that night, Whitey Tittle was on What's My Line? You know, with Dorothy Kilgallen and where he, they said, well, the Bears won the title, but we got Tittle. It was such a great game, to be with my uncle and just keep moving around. He kept smoking a cigarette, and kept moving. But it was, one of those, when the Bears, they had Butkus.
Yeah.
Butkus. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So very, very nice
game. That's great stuff. All right, Ron, thanks for the call.
You're welcome, Nick. Okay. Bye-bye.
312-981-7200 is the phone number if you want to jump in here. You ever been to a really, really cold Bears game?
The kind where your beer is freezing over on top? Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't remember what year it was, but it was Bears-Titans, and it was snowing. This was within the last, I'd say, 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, cold enough to freeze the beer.
I don't know how people can do that. The other thing about going to these frozen tundra Bears games are the maniacs who take off their shirts and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
That's
a whole nother level.
Yeah, no, that's just insane.
And it cracks me up. We talked about our weird weather. I feel like any game that is past December at Soldier Field is a polar vortex in itself.
Oh, yeah. I'm not a big football guy. So I've only been to a couple of Bears games. In my life, seriously, I've only been to, I think, 3 Bears games my entire life. The last one I went to was in November, but it was cold. And I went with my buddy Mike, who has season tickets. And he knows everybody. You know, the people with season tickets, you know everybody around you in the seats, you know. And so, you know, nobody knew who I was because, you know, Mike usually would go with us. He had a partner that he would go to. They split the season tickets between the two of them. But he was out of town, so he brought me. And I, you know, this was the game where, oh, man, I'm trying to remember who the quarterback was. Who would be the quarterback, like, in 2011, 2012?
Grossman?
Wait, was it Grossman? I can't remember. But anyway, he broke his finger. I was at the game where the quarterback broke his finger, and they blamed me. Because I hadn't gone to a game in like 25 years, and I mentioned it on the air. Yeah, I'm going to be at the game, and then he breaks his finger, and everybody's like, it's DiGilio's fault because he's in the, you know, guy hasn't been to a football game in 25 years. He shows up, and the quarterback breaks his finger.
Yeah, I think that was Grossman.
I think it was Grossman. I think you're right.
Yeah.
312-981-7200 is the phone number. 807 area code says, greatest games were in Chicago. We're going to the Hawks games at the old Chicago Stadium, listening to Wayne Mesmer sing the anthem. Then went to a Cubs game. The smell of the field stadium, I'd never been in a grass stadium before. Yeah, listen, you know, we've talked now a few times now about what it was like to see Hawks games at the old barn, at the old Chicago Stadium. And one of the great things, Wayne Mesmer, man. Wayne Mesmer. That's all I can say. From what I understand, I didn't go to this game, but the All-Star game in 1991, the NHL All-Star game in 1991 was played at the Chicago Stadium, and from what I understand, the Mesmer sang the national anthem, and that was right when the first Gulf War started. So apparently the whole place went, you couldn't hear anything. Like, the place was shaking during the anthem, you know, because everybody was feeling patriotic. It was like right, the Gulf War had just started, you know, the first Gulf War had just started. And, you know, Wayne Mesmer, man, you can't go wrong with Wayne Mesmer singing the national anthem. Or Jim Cornelison is the king. But yeah, evidently, you know, people who say that they were there, people who were there say that it was the loudest thing they've ever heard, that the anthem was the loudest anthem they've ever heard, and the entire building was shaking. So. Nick, when I was a kid, I saw Bobby Hull score his 50th goal. It was March 12, 1966, against Detroit at the old stadium. That's pretty cool. That is pretty cool. That's an 815 area code, says. 773 area code says, Soldier Field, November 2016, rugby. Ireland beat New Zealand. The New Zealand All Blacks for the first time in 110 years. Days after the Cubs won after 109 years, the biggest attendance of a rugby game in the U.S. All right, more sports memories from you guys. 312-981-7200 is the phone number, and we would love to hear from you. Right after we take this break for the news, which is coming up in like seconds. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. Coming up in a little bit, my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And we have a really fun Blackhawks Express to play back, and we'll play that back again. The Hawks have won 7 in a row. They're playing great hockey. Lots of fun to watch, so we'll play back that Express coming up. Right now, we are talking about sports. We're talking about sports memories that you have great sporting events that that you saw live. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We got some more texts that are coming in. 608 area code says, here's my sports memory. I was with my mom and saw Robin Yount get his 3,000th hit. I was also at the last game at County Stadium. That's Eric. Was with my sister in Chicago when the Chicago Wolves won the Calder Cup in 2008. We got a drink out of the cup. We got to drink out of the cup as their marketing manager. Oh, there you go. Let's see. 262 area code says, I went to my first hockey game back in January. I was watching the Nashville Predators take on the Chicago Blackhawks in Chicago, and the Predators won 4-3 in overtime. Okay. Hey, Nick, accompany summer bus trip to see the 2005 White Sox. A fun time was had by all. That was Jay. Memorable season for the White Sox there. 2005, of course. See, 630 area code says, my first Cub game when I was five in 1954. I don't remember anything but a Cub game with Grandpa. Also, Stanley Cup game in 1961 at the stadium with my dad. And unfortunately, all three playoff games in San Diego in 84. Oh. Brutal. Steve Garvey. Hey, Nick, my mom is the reason the game was rained out on 8-8-88. Beverly Plim had been a loyal Cub fan her whole life. I remember in the 40s and 50s, she would draw a diagram on notebook paper and record every pitch as she heard it over the radio. She was absolutely against lights at Wrigley. Her feeling was that baseball was a day game to be played in the sun. She passed unexpectedly during surgery at 6:15 a.m. As angry about it as she was, there's no doubt that she caused the storm that night. That's pretty funny. 734 area code says, I'm a Tampa Bay Rays fan. In 1998, I saw one of the inaugural season opening series games in St. Petersburg, came home to Metro Detroit and saw the first home game against the Tigers in full cold weather Tampa Bay gear, then the Devil Rays. I had Tigers fans asking me for their picture with them. That's pretty funny. Here's Brian on WGN. Go ahead, Brian.
Hey, Brother Nick. I've been going to Indy 500 since 95, and I saw Elio Castroneve win all three of his Indy 500 wins, and the last one was, like, most memorable because he had, like, tax problems. He was looking at, like, jail time and being deported and everything else, and when he won, it was, like, his whole family was there, and it was, like, it was great because, I mean, the fans love Elio, and when he won, it was absolutely amazing. It was so great, and he's coming. He's almost won it, like, three other times, and I was like, man, it's, like, so close all those times, but that third one when he climbed the fence also is, like, man, it was great.
That's cool. That's very, very cool. All right, Brian, thanks for the call.
Sure.
All right, there you go. What do we got here? Here's Judy on WGN. Hi, Judy.
Hello, Nick. My sister and I went to a Denver Bronco Packer game back in 82. Bart Starr was a coach back then. And lo and behold, we went up to our seats. We sat with all Wisconsin people. We didn't know. It was so funny. Because she was originally from Wisconsin. Well, fast forward 15 years, I sent her a picture of Bart holding a baby. I says, guess what baby that is? She says, what? I says, his grandson. She goes, oh, God, am I old?
Yeah, that'll age you. That'll definitely
exactly,
age you.
Exactly, exactly. But she still thrives over Bart Starr. I mean, she has pictures all over her office of him.
Yeah.
And she loved him as a kid. You know, growing up, we always went up to Green Bay and had a good time with our dad.
Wow.
So those were the days.
Those were great. Okay, thank you, Judy.
Take care. Bye-bye.
All right, B. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. We're talking about memorable sports events that you attended to, that you saw live. 312-981-7200. 773 area code sends this text that says, Blackhawks versus St. Louis 2016 playoffs, round one, game six. Hawks needed to win to stay in the series. The Hawks were trailing and did not have engagement nor momentum in the game. During a TV timeout, the fans stood up and cheered on the Hawks during the entire timeout. The team became instantly energized and rallied to win the game. It was a real special experience. Unfortunately, the Hawks lost Game 7 of the series in St. Louis. Yes, they did. 773 area code says the 1998 Cubs Giants one game playoff. Steve Traxel pitched a no-hitter into the seventh, and the ghost of Harry floating in a homemade blimp over the right field wall. The crowd was electric. My friend Scott was at that game. And it was his birthday, too. I just remember, I guess they had standing room or something, but he went, and it, you know, and he said it was like one of the best birthday nights he's ever had. Yeah. 847 area code says, Nick, my friend and I were coming home from school in Florida. We were driving through Atlanta. We decided to stop because we saw the baseball field lights from I-75 and saw Hank Aaron hit his 754th home run. But the best was when my dad took me to see Ernie Banks Day at Wrigley. Well, how about that, though? Hank Aaron hitting his 754th home run. That's pretty amazing. That is pretty amazing. I'm trying to think about if I've ever been to a game where somebody broke some sort of record. I'm not sure. Let's see. Here's Gus on WGN. Hi, Gus.
Hi.
Hi.
Well, so I was at the Cal Ripken 2131 in Baltimore.
Oh, wow.
That was, it was the year after the strike. And the moment the baseball strike was settled, I called the Baltimore Sun and I said, do you guys know when the streak will be broken? And the sports desk at the Baltimore Sun knew exactly when that was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so I called up and I ordered tickets. I ordered two sets of tickets. The one game was going to be in Cleveland. The next one was going to be in Baltimore. And sure enough, no rain delays. I got the tickets. I went with my dad, God rest his soul, one of my best friends, and my son, who was 10 at the time. The most memorable day of my life. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable.
You know, I got to interview Cal Ripken, and he's such a nice guy. And I was surprised at how big he was, like, you know, meeting him, like, physically, how big he was, you know? But yeah, I mean, what can you say about Cal Ripken? Class act. Yeah.
Well, he was a class act because we took, you can imagine the pictures we took. It was
sure.
Fast forward, my wife made a beautiful photo album. We went to one of these shows here at here in Chicago at Rosemont. And you're right, he's bigger than life.
Yeah.
And I had heard he's a big deal about shaking hands and looking him in the eye. So I told my son. My son now, he was 18. And I told my son, you just make sure you do this. And Cal got up from the chair, was looking at the photo album. I have a great picture in my basement of my son shaking Cal's hand.
Yeah.
We have it was beyond. It was something else.
Yeah, I bet. I bet. That sounds like a great memory. Gus, thanks for the call.
Thanks, Nick.
Yeah, very cool. Take care. Have a good morning. Yeah, Cal Ripken's cool, man. He was cool. I was sitting in for Cochran one morning. I was doing morning drive, and he came in, you know. I can't remember. I think he was promoting a book. Pretty sure he was promoting a book, that Ripken was promoting a book. And it was funny because, you know, that I told you about the baseball trip that my friends and I went on, right?
Yeah, yeah.
All right, we went to Baltimore. We ended up going to Camden Yards the very first year. And while we were in Baltimore, we went to Babe Ruth's house where he was born, because Babe Ruth was born in Baltimore. So we went to Babe Ruth's house, and I'm like, oh, this is going to be very cool. And we walk in, and there's a giant display. This is in Babe Ruth's house, okay? There's a giant Cal Ripken display in Babe Ruth's house that's interactive with pictures and video and stuff. And you can press a button, and it plays nobody does it better over and over and over again. And I'm like, what is Cal Ripken doing in I mean, I realize, you know, like, he's a hero in Baltimore. There's no question about it. But he's so much of a hero that he could move into Babe Ruth's house. Nobody does it better.
That's funny.
Over and over and over and over again. All right. Okay, here's the deal. Let's take a break here. I got your weather for today and so on. And then my dad's going to call in and tell a joke. And we've got a Blackhawks Express coming up, too. And then we'll wrap up the whole show with all the sports memories that you guys have at 312-981-7200.
It's the best part of the week, baby. It's time to hear something funny. Here we go with your music intro. Ah!
It's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. It's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. Nick's dad tells a joke.
Hey, what'd I say?
It's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. It's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. Nick's dad tells a joke.
Ah, yes! Here we go!
That's right. And we lost my dad. All that buildup. Now we got to call it. We got to get him back on the line here. Yeah. So there you go. So my dad's going to tell a joke, and there you go. How's it going, everybody? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio, and we're here until 5 a.m. After my dad tells a joke, we will play back the Blackhawks Express from yesterday's game. Yeah. Any luck here? No luck getting hold of my dad. Oh. Oh, okay. Keeps going to my dad's voicemail. Okay, Dad, you might want to get your phone fixed. Is it still going to his voicemail? Is it? Oh, he's here. Okay, let's do it before he leaves. Hello, Dad.
How you doing, Dad?
All right, man. How are you?
I'm doing good.
All right. How's Ma?
Good.
All right. You got a joke?
Got a joke. All right. A shoe salesman said to the customer who had gotten him to pull every box off the shelves, "Mind if I rest a minute? Your feet are killing me."
All right. All right. All right.
That's a great one, Dad.
All right. Thank
you,
Dad.
All right, buddy. Take care.
Okay, bye.
There's my dad. Your feet are killing me. That's great. That's a great joke. Okay. All right. So the Hawks played yesterday. It was a matinee against the Dead Wings. And, yeah, they won. So let's listen to it again. We're having a seven in a row for the Hawks. Let's hear that express.
The Chicago Blackhawks go for seven straight wins today in an original six battle with their longest standing rival, the Detroit Red Wings, in the first of two meetings here in the month of February. And with their wild card chase barely alive, a win of any kind over the youthful Wings is a must-have for the Hawks this afternoon.
Murphy ends up with the puck. Put it behind the Hawk net, near corner to Dahlstrom. Set it up ice up the left wing to Stroman. Center ice, hands it off to Brinkett on a 2-on-1 break over the wing line. From the right circle, a shot, they score! It's Dominic Cahoon! To Brinkett in the left circle, feigned a shot toward Bernier and fed it over to Cahoon, who initially could not handle the pass, but he grabbed it and he ripped it past Bernier. And the Hawks are on the scoreboard first. They lead 1-0.
Taken back by Cromwell. Moving it ahead into the Hawk zone, down to the right wing corner. Nielsen there. He put it back up. The boards picked off by DeBrinket. Back the other way to Cahoon. Got a step on Cromwell. Over the red wing line, down the right wing. Put it to Strom. And finish it to score! Dylan Strom crashing the net. Picks up his second point in the game. And a sweet feed from Cahoon from near the bottom of the right wing circle to the goal mouth. There was Strom to knock it past Bernier. And it's 2-0 Hawks. Cuckoo's got it between the circles. Passes up the left wing. Drake Kajula, center ice, front of the benches. Sent it across the rink to Kane. He's chased back into the Hawk zone by DeKaiser. Turns over the puck. Christopher Ain fires from the left circle. He scores. And this beats Ward over the left shoulder.
A top right corner shot there by Christopher Ain, and the Red Wings are on the board, trailing 2-1. Back in the wing zone, Chalowski flipping it back along the far boards. Erickson back to Chalowski, wing line, shot it to the Hawk line to Nyquist, picked off by Keith. Headed to break it, Cahoon now over the line, down the front, and he scores! A nice handoff there from the left wing boards from Strome, and that combination connects again. It's Cahoon from Strome and DeBrinket, and the Hawks lead 3-1 with 12:15 left in the third. Larkin takes the pass from Green over the Hawk line down the left wing to the half boards and spun it in front of the net. It's knocked out of there as Abdelkader fired a shot wide. Here's Jensen now to the slot. Fed the left circle, Nyquist shoots, he scores! Murphy laid down to block that shot, and Nyquist looked like he held on to it for a second and then shot it past Cam Ward. And with 4:30 left in the third, the Red Wings trail 3-2. Don't go away. Here's DeKeyser from the line, left point, a long shot, and Ward is down with a butterfly save. Tate spins the rebound out of there to Kane over the wing line down the left wing. Shoot, he scores! 14 straight games with a point for Patrick Kane. He fired it low and under the blocker of Bernier. The Hawks get the two-goal lead back with 3:33 left in the third. It's 4-2 Hawks. Kane on the left wing side. Finds Taves right wing side. Wing line. Shoots. He scores! Empty net goal, and that should put this one away. With 2:01 left in the third, the captain lights the lamp. An empty netter makes it 5-2 in favor of the Hawks. And the Hawks are 121 seconds away from their seventh win in a row. Nielsen over the center ice circle. He'll dump the puck off the inboards and in behind the net. And then Cahoon was able to wrestle it away from Athanasiou, carry out up the right side, and then take the puck and ragtime off the clock. Hands it to Dahlstrom. 3-2-1. Hawks win! 7 straight wins for the Chicago Blackhawks and 2 huge points. If they have any hope of trying to get that last wild card spot, they needed a win coming into this game, and they got it. They beat the Red Wings here at the United Center 5-2.
There it is. 7th in a row, man. 7 in a row for the Blackhawks. They're playing great hockey, man. So much fun to watch. Their next game is tomorrow at 6 o'clock. They're playing in Boston. So it'll be the Blackhawks and the Bruins tomorrow at 6 o'clock. You can always hear it right here on 720 WGN. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And we got a couple of minutes here where we were talking about sporting events that that you remember fondly, and some of the other ones that you see. We used to sit out into the in the right field bleachers on a regular basis at Wrigley. We used to go to the games pretty regularly. There was a couple of summers in a row there where I was challenged by unemployment, and so we went to a lot of games. My buddy and I went to a lot of games. And like in 90 and 91, I think those are the 2 years that we saw the most Cub games. So we would go like seriously, like almost every day. And it was always in the right field bleachers, and we always had a great time out there. You know, like early in the season, especially when it's like freezing out. Have you ever been to a Cub game where there's snow?
No. Can't say that I have.
We had. I remember we went to a Cub game, and it was in April, and we were having snowball fights in the bleachers. I'm not kidding. And of course that's not surprising considering, you know, how cold it stays in Chicago through April.
This last year, being our first year with our new partner, the White Sox.
Yes.
I almost got into a snowball fight with Brian Noonan at opening day. Yeah, when it was snowing. Yeah.
At
Guaranteed Rate.
Guaranteed Rate.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, I was sitting with our engineer Ernie,
sure,
and Patty Vasquez and Brian Noonan during the game.
Having some snowball fights.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I know Ernie's a big Sox fan.
Oh yeah, he's a major
Sox fan, Ernie. So when the Cubs won the World Series, he was like, "All right, I'm glad for you guys," because, you know, they, obviously the Sox won in 2005.
Yeah.
And he's like, "I'm glad for you guys, you know, but I don't want to hear it." Because, we were, obviously, we went nuts when they won. And when they won the World Series. I'll never forget it because Andy Mazur fell off the chair. Like, we were in the studio, and he actually just, boom, he dropped off and fell off the chair when they won. And then I followed that, you know, we came in, and we followed that game, and the entire show was about the Cubs.
No, oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it was fun to be on the air after that. It really was. It was a blast. It was an incredible night. And that game seven. I mean, you know, and I'm not just saying this because the Cubs won it. That's probably the greatest game seven of all time in the history of the World Series.
Oh, it was. Yeah.
I mean, I'm not just saying that because the Cubs won.
No, it was an emotional roller coaster.
It was ridiculous. It was ridiculous when it started raining. I'm sitting on my couch going, you got to be kidding me. You can't write this stuff.
Yeah.
But thank God for the rain, man. That was the blessing right there.
It really was.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, those are some of the sports memories. Thank you guys for sharing. We'll be back tomorrow. We'll be back tomorrow morning. And I believe Steve Johnson from the Chicago Tribune is going to be joining us. And again, Dan Shugru is off all week. He's taking some time off. He'll be off all week. But Ben is going to be filling in, and we'll see you tomorrow.